BFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
Yes. I'm looking for a gray-haired gentleman, very dark-skinned Capricorn. Tell him that I went to the clinic today, and I found out that I have herpes simplex 10. And I think Victor should go check himself out with his physician to make sure everything is fine before things start falling off on the man.
Paul Perillo.
Wow. You know, it says here that by the time the average American is 50, he's got 5 pounds of undigested red meat in his bowels.
Why are you telling me this? What makes you think I have any interest in that at all?
Well, you eat a lot of red meat.
And Andy. And Andy?
Jesus.
Andy Hart.
How you doing?
Some guy named Tom.
Just a man who wrecked the buffet at the Harrow Club this morning.
Lower your voice, for Christ's sake.
What, can a guy hear me through the wall?
Yes, he can.
And you never know, Lori might stop by.
We're not going to fall for a banana in the tailpipe.
You're not going to fall for the banana in the tailpipe?
It should be more natural, brother. It should flow out like this. Look, man, I ain't falling for no banana in my tailpipe.
PFW in Progress.
I had to go to the bathroom. I was walking by. It looked like a nice, clean place, so I stopped.
Okay, it's PFW in Progress, so we're not resident. We're all screwed up.
Where are we?
Andy and Tom back from the combine. We haven't got our bearings yet. We're still on Indianapolis time.
I'm still looking for a steak, which, if I'm not mistaken, I'm still looking same as our time.
Yes.
Is it not?
I'm still looking for B-Lo.
Yeah, we're looking for B-Lo to contribute at some point.
It's Andy and
that's
Tom.
That's enough.
with Paul Perillo. Web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. You guys talk amongst yourselves while I get this microphone adjusted.
Okay, we're back from the combine. It was fun. Tom and I have lots of tales to tell, both football-related and non-football-related, for some of those entertaining tales that we'll get to, I'm sure, in some of the slow days, maybe June.
Yes.
We'll start pulling those out.
I don't think we'll be getting to any of those.
Well, some of them are interesting. Oh, no. Not the stuff we discussed off the air.
Oh, okay.
We have some good, lighthearted tales about B-Lo and Tom and me and Indy and
yeah,
Jude.
like that. The trip for me started off on the wrong foot. Some clodhopper from Indiana sat next to me telling me his life story. Andy got a big kick out of that one.
Yeah, Tom had that guy talking to him. The guy sitting next to me goes, oh, there's a free seat, and he leaves. So I have two seats. I fly better commercial than I do on the Patriots
plane.
Just
in case you were wondering, the guy's wife sells insurance. He has two kids. He's like kind of into plumbing. She went to the University of Indianapolis. Holy Christ. But once we landed, if anyone out there, never stay at the Embassy Suites Hotel. It is terrible.
Let's just be honest. I call them the Embassy Not So Suites.
They have a nice free breakfast, but
they're
apparently
not a sponsor, are they, Gary?
I don't care if they are. You can't get internet there. Their server is too small. It was terrible. They have a nice free breakfast, but here's the thing: you can walk off the street because they don't check. So just stay somewhere else. Go eat their breakfast, and they have drinks from 5:30 to 7:30.
Yeah, every night free drinks too, which some of the local college girls found out because they were flirting with B-Lo. And I go, she said,
what?
She admitted she didn't stay there.
First of all.
Oh, they were cocked.
Oh,
first
yeah.
First of all, I just have to, I can't, flirting with B-Lo, I just
yes, but,
can't get past that.
Said why?
I don't care.
The funny part of this, well, they were flirting with him, but they were just as interested as in the 90-year-old men that were at the bar feeding them a Kahlua and something drink. They were just kind of making the rounds looking for whatever they could get.
Were they high?
But, no.
No. I mean,
now it all makes sense.
No, but
now I understand completely.
If I was 22 and single, though, I probably would have been taking him to that free breakfast in the morning.
Not terrible. Certainly not terrible. And for B-Lo.
Now that's classic. Right
any
there.
Port in a storm for B-Lo.
Yeah. Basically, that's what Tom is saying.
But the funny part was she admitted she wasn't staying there. She was just coming for the nightly free drinks from 5:30 to 7:30. And I go, oh, where are you staying? No, I'm not staying anywhere. I live in Indianapolis. She's just coming to get free drinks every night.
So people were just coming.
What a wonderful world.
Maybe if they didn't spend the money on the alcohol that they're pouring into local college students, they could have had better internet service
right,
and somebody
right.
at the front
How
desk
about,
that could answer questions.
And I'm sure that the listeners are all, you know,
well, no, they should. Don't ever stay there.
Because
we're saving them
for $200 a night. That's a terrible
But
hotel.
I want to know, as a point of reference, better, worse, same. Backup hotels in Houston.
Oh, whoa. This was way better.
This was a
hotel.
Okay.
Those were motels and,
yep.
You know, hooker hangouts.
Okay.
The biggest
that is the difference.
Okay.
The
well,
biggest problem
now,
I had,
now we're
Paul,
talking about levels. Is, you know, we're used to staying in some pretty nice places with the Patriots.
Right.
Yeah,
so
well,
when you guys say it's a bad place.
For the price, we're saying. for $200 a night, you can get a better better room.
No
than
question.
That.
No question.
Did you have NFL Network?
No. No NFL Network.
But it was a clean place.
Not really.
Relatively. No, I mean, compared to what we usually stay at, no. A nice hotel, not even close. But compared to, again, the hooker hangouts in Houston and in Florida, the different totally. You know, in the middle somewhere. But to me, I used to think that $200 a night got you a pretty nice hotel.
Right.
I guess their selling point is that they have
a $25 couch right. that you wouldn't sit on if your life depended on.
Yeah.
I mean, awful. Awful. But we'll get back to the football, Paul. Well, first, how was your week without my constant complaining and Andy's constant yapping up in the office?
Well, we had it for the first hour of last week's show.
That's good. And then how'd that second hour go?
Second hour was tough. Not going to lie to you. Second hour was long. I'm sure it was pretty boring. It was boring for me. I'm sure it was boring for the listeners.
We were laughing while we were stuck in the airport about it. I can tell you that much.
I will say this. Tons, and Gary will be here as my witness, tons of emails. We had a million emails. It was unbelievable.
Well, that's one of those where they figure, you're not carrying it on your own. We better email in and get some,
well,
some dialogue
going. We got 100 of them today, too.
It was tough. There's no question about it. And we had one guy that wrote in. One guy wrote in last week and had this really, really whacked out trade proposal where he wanted to send like 18 picks, Matt Castle and someone else to Detroit for their first round pick in Dre Bly. And, you know, I'm by myself, so I got nothing else to do. I'm actually dissecting analyzing it, right? So we had an emailer, you know, like the next day said, Paul, you lost me when you were really taking that guy's trade proposal seriously. And I had to stop listening. So
but you're like, you know, any port in a storm there. You had an email that you could spend 5 minutes on, you spend 5 minutes.
There you go. Here's the thing. The hour I did by myself. If every email
it's kinda
that
like
we got
with the girls at the bar,
yeah.
If the emails that I got were all phone calls, would have been fine. It's just that I was like B-Lo. I never stopped talking.
Well,
you couldn't turn me off.
Before I give you my expert opinion on the combine, let's get an amateur's view. Andy, what did you think of this year's combine? The players, the things that you noticed when you were down there?
I think it's a bad year to have two late first-round picks
agree.
And be looking for linebackers.
Well, you know, and we were talking about this yesterday on the podcast, Andy.
B-Lo was.
B-Lo actually brought it up and then never
How
let,
would he know?
Never
All
let
he
Tom
knows about
I...
is what was going on in the hallway at the combine, nowhere else.
Well, Tom had actually mentioned exactly what you just said about it maybe being a bad year to have two first-round picks. And when that's the case, doesn't it make sense to trade down?
I think it makes sense to either trade up or trade out. Either go up and get Patrick Willis or take one guy and trade the other pick, do something. I don't think you can stand pat.
Get to the second round if you can.
Yeah, because in this class that I've noticed, Mike Mayock said about six, maybe seven blue chippers. It's usually around
that's
12
about
to
half.
15. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's
so,
terrible.
What you're saying
Although
is,
John Beeson's on the rise.
Yes. Well, that's who's coming to the Patriots. In case, for those of you that don't know, John Beeson, linebacker, Miami. We got him penciled in. But that's the thing.
We know nothing about him, however.
You get to the late first round, I'm looking at guys in the third round, and I'm saying, what's the difference?
Same.
The exact same players.
Well, that's why I say, rather than move up, move down, because
well, I was
you
just
can
thinking,
get a guy that's the same for a lot less money.
I was just thinking, trade and get a first rounder next year.
Oh, you could do
and
that.
And then say, you know, roll the dice, and they have a better idea of us
from,
of what next year's draft will be.
I like the 2003 theory where they traded with Baltimore out of the, you know, the second pick. They had two first-round picks in 2003. Yep. They traded one of them to Baltimore. I think that's the year the Ravens ended up drafting Kyle Bowler. Mm-hmm. And we wound up with, I think it was the Eugene Wilson-Bethel Johnson second round. Not sure which one was the traded pick. I think it might have been Wilson.
Yeah, go Wilson there. Looks better.
But the point being is you can get a guy that's probably every bit as good as the guy you could have gotten 24, 26, 28, whatever the case may be, and you pay a little bit less as an early second-round pick as opposed to a late first-round pick.
Yeah, and according to the people that we talked to at the Combine, looks like next year's draft is going to be much better, too.
Right. It's always about the next draft.
It always is until you get there.
That's why I hate draft experts. Draft experts, Tom, no offense to you because I know that you follow the draft and you care
you
about
the draft
a lot. Fancy
yourself a draft expert.
But the draft is always about the next draft.
No,
it's never about the one that's going to happen. It's always the next. This one's okay. But the next one is the one when Jerry Rice times seven is going to come out of the draft.
And I will make a note that this draft may look bad on paper, but 5 years from now could end up being a It'll be the best draft ever.
Yes,
you know, they were just we're talking about top end talent. Like last year when Andy and I were at the combine, it seemed like a star was walking in every 2 seconds. This year it was like, hey, where's Calvin Johnson?
Right.
You know, that was about it.
I would say he was the only real. I guess Adrian Peterson, Calvin Johnson, the real stars.
I think the two quarterbacks. You know,
well, Russell. Johnson, I don't see how anyone can critique him, criticize him on anything right now.
Nothing.
The guy shows
no
up,
negatives.
Not planning to run.
Like,
they throw shoes on. He runs a 4.35.
Great.
He
in
was
the community.
Engaging in the interviews.
The problems.
Says he wants to be one of those build around me players. Community. I'll help the kids. I want to help everybody.
It'd be interesting to see how that dynamic works. Because you know how we always talk about this every year. Something happens from the combine to April. Where you get dissected and analyzed and you start falling.
I don't think he can.
And I wonder how, because this guy seemingly is the perfect franchise player.
And Dick Vermeil said, you know, it's going to be tough if you get him four, because he said, I would say 28 out of 32 teams will have him as the number one ranked player on their board.
Right.
And he's going to end up going fourth probably to Tampa Bay. That's going to be a steal if he turns out to be the player that everyone thinks he can be.
In terms of prospect, now, anything can happen. These guys look great.
Yeah,
there's
anything.
Other guys. But right now, he's my can't-miss prospect.
I got two.
He's the guy.
Him, and you know who else.
Ron Landry.
Yeah. I just think when you run like – I was impressed with his interview because he looked all business. You know, he spoke soft, and I just think the guy's a killing machine. I know you do too, Andy, and I'm sure we'll watch some tape on him here coming up. But, man, someone who gets him, you're going to get the guy Roy Williams should have been, except, you know, not the 245 fat guy that plays in Dallas.
He also has that Rodney Harrison, the little bit of edge to him.
Not cocky.
No,
but
not just he knows he's good. He knows he can hurt you. He wants you to know he can hurt you.
But he doesn't tell you
right.
He's good.
It's just there.
We had too many guys at the combine telling us how fast they were, how they were going to do this, going to do that. He was a guy that you knew he knew it, but he didn't tell you that he knew it. And that's what I liked about
him. I would say that would be the second story of the combine. Guys promising things and not producing. Started with Brian Lowe, went right on through Johnny Lee Higgins.
Gary Russell.
Yep. All these guys promising what they were going to do, and it never lasted. It never panned out. Total disappointment.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things. We were disappointed in a lot of guys.
We need to take this to a different direction. We're going to end up getting ourselves in trouble.
I'm already in trouble on other fronts.
Funny. I can't even sit on my stool. I'm laughing so hard. Funny.
But some guys had incredible workouts. Chris Houston, the cornerback from Arkansas, is clearly on the rise.
You reminded me talking Chris Houston. He was one of the cornerbacks. We found a sleeper Patriots mid-round receiver, second, third-round guy, Courtney Taylor.
That's the guy from Auburn?
Auburn. Every guy who spoke about him, whether it was his teammates covering him in practice or opposing cornerbacks, said he is a tremendous route runner, one of the best receivers they ever played, based solely on the fact that he's a great route runner, had a good combine.
A lot of
guys
said
that. He's a guy
to
keep an eye on.
And but Mike Mayock told me that he thought the best fit receiver-wise for the Patriots was Gonzalez from Ohio State, and he said it's because he can get off the line. He compared him to Troy Brown. He said he could come in and do what Troy
great
Brown
number two.
Does.
I compare him to Troy Brown, too.
Well, I'm saying, when I asked him, you know, and he said, out of the receivers that I've looked at, the best fit in New England would be Gonzalez.
You don't want to, you know, jerk the quarterback off.
So,
well, he didn't do that. the thing I'd say about Gonzalez, first of all, you know I don't like him. Second of all, I don't like him because I think he had a lot of success being the number two, playing opposite a very good guy. And I think when you saw Ted Ginn not in there, suddenly Anthony Gonzalez becomes average.
Never,
he didn't have great numbers as it is, playing across from a very productive receiver.
Yeah.
And the final one is, I think he's too smart for here.
You
he's a guy, talking to him
the
in the interview,
guy you talk to.
He was, everything was cerebral. Everything was analyzed. You know, they asked him about the 40 time and the fact that that's such a big deal at the combine, and he was, well, I think running is something that's relatively instinctive to all people, and we do it from almost the day we're born. And so I really don't understand why so much pressure is put on one significant forward. Like, everything was just too cerebral. Why are you thinking so much? Just play football. and I think if he's the kind of guy that comes here, and all, you know, maybe not day one, but at some point Bill tells him to do something, and he goes,
why?
Well, why would I do that?
Why do you want me to do that?
Whereas I think they like the guy who says, yes, sir.
Yeah, and I think there's a little, you know, and Tom was talking about this yesterday and in the same line of thinking, Andy. I think there's a little of David Givens in that. I think David Givens was one of those wide receivers who has a little, you know, and he was a good player. I mean, I think that Gonzalez can be, first of all, I share a lot of the reservations that Tom and Andy had with Gonzalez. We talked about, I mean, he's one of the big school guys that we all have seen play a number of times. I was, however, very impressed that he did turn in a 4.4.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't think he was that fast. And that was one of my fears is that.
He didn't even have his tent with him. Imagine what he could have done if he had his tent with him.
His hyperbaric chamber. But.
That kind of annoys me, too.
Well, that's another one, you know.
A little tent thing.
You wonder how, you know, he says it works for him. Who knows? But you wonder, and I think that David Givens was a very, very solid football player for the Patriots. But I think in talking to some people, nothing specific, I don't have a specific story to relay, but I think that there were some reservations with Givens in that one person in the organization put it to me, he's too smart for his own good. And I don't mean that to be. I don't want people to look at that and say, what are the Patriots thinking about? Why would, too much intelligence be a bad thing? It wasn't said that, you know, he was too interested in classwork or anything like that, or he was but sometimes in football, you just need guys to do it because.
Right. You need a soldier. You don't need a general.
Yeah.
I'm the general. I'll tell you what to do.
Yeah.
You do what I tell you to do.
And I think Givens was one of those guys that didn't necessarily buy into everything that the organization wanted to preach, and I think sometimes and he was too smart to do it.
I can give you an example is when we went to him a couple of years ago and asked him about being on the injury report, and he said, I shouldn't be. Why am I on the injury report?
He got mad.
Yeah. Well,
whereas,
they don't like that kind of thing.
Whereas another guy,
say,
maybe,
it is what it is.
Another guy would say, oh, yeah, that's what they wanted me to do.
Right.
Whereas Givens
says, questioned it.
Givens looks at the big picture and says, I don't want my name on an injury report. At some time, I'm going to be a free agent. I don't want to have the knock of being an injury-prone guy.
Well, I think
even though he is
would question it, and some of the other guys wouldn't, and that just makes you question their value here specifically.
And there's two guys that ran good 40s who I have questions about as far as on the field. Gonzalez was one for which you said every time Ted Ginn was out of the lineup, he did nothing. The other one, cornerback Leon Hall from Michigan, when he played against Jarrett and Ginn at the end of the year, he got lit up. Now, granted, he played for 4 years. So
there's 17 red flags going up on that.
Yeah,
game,
you can't take two games. You do got to take the whole body of work. But the fact that he looked not just bad but terrible against those two, I don't know if I want to jump and take him in the first round.
But then you have to also, you know, where do you put those two? If you say those two are going to be all pro receivers, well, then he's not necessarily going to face those. You know what I mean? If that's his.
There's a lot of question marks about the receivers after Johnson.
Right.
Guys
but
got
I wouldn't
them all
put
over
those
the board.
Two guys as all pro receivers in the NFL right now.
No,
he's
I know.
He's going to face that caliber receiver or better most weeks, wouldn't you say?
Except when he plays Patriots.
I said most weeks.
I'm just kidding. I think, actually, it's a good year for the Patriots to be looking receiver in second and third round because I think you can get a guy there who might be as good as the guys taken 21st
and,
overall.
Well, but, I think that the point that you made, Andy, sorry, Tom.
Oh, it's okay.
The point that you made about, is it Courtney Taylor?
Yeah.
The Auburn kid? And I read that update that you guys did. I don't know which one of you wrote it. I think Andy did. But the thing that we were talking about a lot with that, this may be a thin draft. Maybe there are only six or seven potential blue chip, all pro type blocks.
That's a good question, huh?
To
Mike
build
Mayock's
on
press conference.
But the wide receiver position.
I got a one on one like B-Lo.
Sorry, the wide receiver position, by all accounts, is very deep.
Right.
So I can't see taking one at 24 or 28, or even worse, can't see moving up to get one. Because I think you can get a very solid, capable guy, and I'm glad that you guys came back with some name, a guy like Courtney Taylor. I'm glad.
Well, he just kept popping up. It was like one of those, like, you're not even really listening, but everybody keeps saying, Courtney Taylor, route runner.
Fourth round. I think you can get a guy who is maybe marginally as good as Anthony Gonzalez.
Well, see,
fourth round.
I think the wide receiver class is deep in that there's a lot of guys that could be very good pros, but I think it's littered with guys who have bust written all over them that are going to go higher.
Like your,
so
what's the Higgins guy's name?
Johnny Lee Higgins.
Johnny Lee.
4.18, ran a 4.48. So,
but he would have been happy
with a
4.2.
Would have settled for a 4.2.
Apparently,
so there's a lot of good stuff. There's a lot of good stuff you guys had. I have to give you guys props.
Thanks.
Hey, thanks, Paul.
And
what'd you do?
I got a chicken parm one day.
I think this is.
I hosted a show by myself.
Oh, Olsen, by the way, I just happened to look up.
Monster,
Olsen,
huh? Monster workout.
Was the second tight end on a lot of people's list coming in. I would say is now clearly the first tight end. Some people had him as a 4.46, 4.47.
I still like the guy from Oregon State, though. I know he's not getting a lot of love, Joe Newton. He was a guy I really liked coming back from injury.
I remember seeing him in the USC game. I remember I think I called you at the end of that USC game because the announcer was annoying me that day. But the Olsen kid, I can't really figure out. I watch Miami, and I know they have had absolutely brutal quarterback play for the last 5 years. And I can't figure out if I think this guy is any good because he's basically their only offensive weapon, or is he even better than I thought because of the fact that they don't have any offensive weapons, and yet he still catches 10 passes every game.
I'm not going to pretend I've seen him play a ton, but watching the drills on the NFL Network, I think he catches the ball pretty well.
He's my boy from Delaware, Ben Patrick.
He ran very well.
Shooting up the charts everywhere. But just to get back to Olsen, you know, that drill they do where they turn, they turn, then they run back and forth alternating. I thought he caught the ball very well. I think he looks pretty fluid. I think he's going to be a pretty good player. If his speed,
this guy looks like Ben Watson.
If he can run a 4.75 on the field in pads, I think he's going to be a pretty good player.
And there was actually a couple of guys. Piscatelli, the safety.
That's my boy.
I saw him play a couple of times this year, and I said to Andy, I said, it's not often that a defensive guy on Oregon State really catches your eye. And I said, I kind of liked him. And Andy went and talked with him, and he liked what he had to say. Yep. So he's a guy that's
very
on our radar now. Aaron Rouse is another guy that Andy really likes. We haven't watched film on him yet, but
I was
going
to say safety
guy seems
to be another position that
kind of deep
is pretty deep. And if you find the right guy for your system with the right set of skills, I think you can get a good player deeper in the draft. It's like linebacker. I think unless you get, as I said, Beeson or Willis up high, I'm not sure you're getting an impact linebacker. I think safety, wide receiver, you could get guys that could help you right away. Second, third, fourth round.
You know, just to back up both of you guys' feelings on this, and you guys were joking around with me. What did I do? Well, one of the days that you were gone, I actually did do something in between chicken parm sandwiches. I went on Mel Kiper's combine conference call, and he broke down, and he definitely backs up your points that you just made about both safeties and linebackers. Very, very top heavy. There's a couple. You know, one or two inside linebackers. You know, obviously Willis at the top. Willis is on the cover of his latest.
Tell me that doesn't look. I know no one can see it, but that is what I want in an inside linebacker. He's big. His biceps are bulging. He's got a cast on his right arm that looks like he's about ready to knock somebody out. Just mean looking.
But he talked a lot about. He broke down all the positions like interior defensive linemen, outside guys, outside linebackers, inside, and a lot of the positions he said there are. Only a couple, you know, outside linebackers, he says, not nearly the star power that they've had in the past couple of drafts, you know, and then he went to safeties, and now safety, corners, there's only a couple of guys, but safeties, there's a lot of guys.
I think it goes from Landry, I then think you have a bunch of guys,
Griffin,
you know, if you
Reggie
like Griffin,
Nelson.
You like Reggie Nelson.
I like Griffin a little bit.
I love Griffin.
And by the way,
love
Andy,
to see him in a Patriots uniform.
For those out there, we waited, they did a bad job this year of getting players out there. I'm not gonna hold back on that. I thought they did a terrible job at the combine, but
why don't you email the league.
We waited for Brandon Merriweather because he's one of the guys we desperately wanted to talk to.
Never saw him.
He didn't come, but there was a transcript, and I liked the way he answered it. He said, "You know,
it's a good answer."
He said, "This was my fault." He said, "And I'm paying for it." And he said, "I deserve to because I was a leader of that football team, and I shouldn't have been acting that way." He didn't make any excuses. He didn't say, "Well, they went after." He took full responsibility for it, and said,
"That's for the brawl incident."
Talking about the on-field thing, he said, "I was supposed to be a leader on the team," and I thought that was a very mature
way
of answering that question. I regret that. I was at fault. I was supposed to be the one stopping that from happening.
Right.
I like those, whether it means anything in the long run or not, I like those guys that are willing to come out and say those things. The other guy from Florida, the defensive end, did the same exact
Moss.
Thing. He had a suspension for marijuana, and he just said, "I made a mistake. You know, things were out of hand." He even kind of passed the buck a little bit into the Zook era, where he said, you know, there was a lot going on around here, including me, that shouldn't have been under Coach Zook. Coach Meyer came in and turned that around, put some limitations in place that helped us out. But in terms of getting suspended, he said it was a mistake.
Now,
shouldn't have happened.
That was before he told us he could have beaten Ohio State by himself,
right.
Which was,
one of the best comments
of the combine.
What did he say,
four or five teams from our league could have done the same thing that we did to Ohio State? I absolutely loved that quote. I loved it.
That was funny.
But, you know, I did a thing on the outside linebackers I'm doing for the paper, and Mike Mayock was very, very –
stern on saying that there's no DeMarcus Ware in this draft. There's no Manny Lawson or Cameron Wimbley. So it looks like it doesn't look like the Patriots are going to go that direction in the first round, because everyone we talked to said Jarvis Moss is a hand-down player,
right,
including Jarvis Moss,
right,
who said, I'd rather play with my hand down. Quentin Moses, I'd rather play with my hand down. Anthony Spencer, I'd rather play with my hand down.
Actually, Quentin Moses says, I'd rather have some of my teammates there.
Yeah. You know what the problem I think
teammates
with...
were better.
No, but you know what I think the problem is with Moses, Andy, I noticed? He said, like, when I asked him if he was double-teamed, and he said, no, I really wasn't. And then he said, I always thought Charles Johnson was as good, if not better, than me. I think somewhere along the line he might have lost a little confidence,
yeah,
when he got in that rut.
Yep.
He's a very nice kid. I thought he was great talking. He was very honest. And
well, sometimes honesty gets you in a little trouble.
But you know what? That comment,
like, he
too,
lost a little confidence.
Tom, right, told me about the double-team comment yesterday, and we were laughing about it. But I said, you know what? That's another one I give the kid
honest,
credit for,
yeah,
because – first of all, there's 32 teams that know whether or not the kid was double-teamed.
Right.
So there's no use of lying about it. You know, they're gonna watch and they're going to say, what's this guy talking about? He hasn't seen a double-team on one tape that I've seen. So if he really isn't double-teamed, it doesn't do you any good to say, yeah, I got a little extra attention. You know, I had 12 sacks last year. That's why I only had 4 this year, whatever.
Right.
I know that the disparity was pretty big with him. I give the guy credit for saying something that's not necessarily going to put him in a positive light.
So it'll be interesting. I mean, he didn't run well. He ran in the 4.8, which really hurt him, I think. And plus, you have the bad senior year, the, like, 12 reps of the 225. So he's kind of on the
Gary
way down. No.
Spencer's the guy out of that group that you just mentioned, Tom, that I would probably look at a little bit more, because it seems like Purdue is kind of a pipeline,
yeah,
for this.
They've done it.
So
I'm
many
not
times.
Sure he is capable.
I don't know if he's the guy. I mean,
I've
watching seen
some of the workouts. I'm not sure he has the athleticism and the fluidity.
Now, did you see more from Nebraska?
I think I did.
He looked pretty fluid.
He did look pretty good.
Now, he's a guy from Nebraska who, he weighs 272, I believe, right now.
Yeah, he says he could drop.
Because he's played defensive end in college, and teams have been asking him. The Patriots were one of them. You might have gotten that on video, but we didn't. Who said that he could drop down to 260.
We got Rich Eisen, though.
He could drop down to 260, and I wanted to see him do the linebacker drills, which he did, and he looked very fluid.
Right.
Well, I like those Nebraska guys. They seem like, you know,
like
they're
Carricker
all business.
Better.
Carricker is a top 10 pick.
That's the only thing I worry about is
Moore's a third round.
How much you get?
You know,
it's kind
I,
of the
I
Tony
like
Gonzalez.
Landry,
I mean,
over Savvy Piscatelli too.
No, but the Anthony Gonzalez thing. I don't know how he plays when he's not playing. You know what I mean?
Right,
I worry what how much is
get,
for, in the other direction.
But if you get a Moore in round three or four, I think that's worth it,
right,
instead of reaching for a Gonzalez in round one, where I don't think that's worth it.
Well, I got to tell you, what I think there are a ton of in this draft are potential very good special teamers. And I know
not
glamorous radio.
Well, you talk to the best gunner in college football.
Deion Anderson from
Connecticut. Now, Paul, I wouldn't take offense to that because I started talking to him, but Gary Russell came in, and I ran over to get, you know, the Gary Russell exclusive, you know, the how he was going to be the breakout player in the
Won't
draft.
Won't be hearing from him no more.
So bottom line is, while I was talking to Gary Russell, Andy was talking to some no-name fullback from UConn who's going to get drafted, while Gary Russell will be in the
That's
CFL.
Right.
But this guy was huge.
He was huge, no neck, just what you'd think of if you saw a prototypical special teamer. I don't want to take any shots at him, but I don't think he got 1,600 on his SATs. I think he loves football. I think he loves banging heads. And he has that crazy edge to him that is what it takes to be a wedge breaker. He told me a story. Well, first of all, I asked him, I hear you're the best gunner in college football. And he's like, yeah, what do you mean by that? And I said, kind of scratched my head for a minute thinking, well, this could go one of two ways. So I'll stick to football. I heard you played gunner on special teams. And he laughed and then told a story about running down at one point, covering a kick, and no one was blocking him, and he's thinking to himself, wait, no one's blocking me. This is kick return. They should be trying to block me. And then all of a sudden he saw a couple of linemen get their hands together and sort of turn and pay attention to him, and he realized, oh, that's the wedge, and started flapping his arms, high-stepping, doing like an Indian chant, yelling, wedge, and just flat out nuts and launched himself into it. So he's clearly the kind of guy that...
That's the guy I want covering kicks.
No question. Told another story. He was
I don't
a great
know if
story.
We can play, but...
Right. He's a great storyteller. He told another story. His brother started playing peewee football before he did, and he was a little kid watching his brother on the sideline, and the first time he saw him play, they handed the ball to his brother. His brother was running with it, and he's thinking to myself, oh, yeah, there he goes. Then some kid tackled him, and apparently Deion Anderson didn't really get the game of football yet in his life and thought to himself, what's that kid doing to my brother? And ran on the field and tackled that kid and started swinging at him. And they were rolling around in the dirt on a Pee Wee Football League field, and the coach had to pull him off and say, what's going on? And had to explain to him the rules of football, that when a guy has the ball, you're allowed to hit him and tackle him. And but he clearly has that little edge between craziness
and craziness.
Just, I don't know what it is.
I don't know where else you're going because I talked to him for about 2 minutes, and I ended with craziness.
But I like him.
You're talking about storytellers, so let's get this out here now so we don't have to keep going over it every 2 minutes. Zach Diassi,
oh, yeah.
Listen, none of us have ever seen him play a down of football because he plays at Brown, and neither have most of you.
Paul, he likes low-level football.
I asked him. And listen, all you emailers.
Just so you know, I look down on the Ivy League.
And all the emailers, listen, I'm pretty sure you haven't watched Ivy League football either, so we haven't seen any tape on him. I know he's white. I know he's the son of that other idiot, Diassi, the Cowboys drafted.
Steve Diassi.
And I know everyone wants him on the Patriots because he was a ball boy and it was a great story, but we have to watch film on him because, as they said on the NFL Network, he runs a nice 40, he looks good, but he's never faced a 330-pound tackle that's going to manhandle
him
in the pros.
Which is in, by the way. I guess that the film is here.
And yes,
we can start watching that beginning,
Zach Diassi on it?
Beginning of next week. I don't think that Zach Diassi will be on. Well, you never know.
Well, he better be because we need to see
it
something.
It might be because last year we had that guy at a Bloomsburg and some of those places.
Yeah,
so.
he might be on there. So,
beginning of next week we can start watching some of that.
But I've already seen a couple of emails. I mean, all we can do is tell you that he was a pretty nice guy to talk to.
Very
productive
player at the 1AA level, at the
great
low
build,
1AA level.
Great measurables.
And had a great combine.
Now you just got to transfer measurables, build, frame, all that to playing football.
Right.
And the guy, who's the guy I don't like on the NFL Network, big fat sweaty guy?
Jamie Dukes.
He was the guy, he was all over that. He said, what is this kid going to do when a 350-pound tackle gets a hold of him? Because he didn't face that in the Ivy League.
Right.
And this might be a 350-pound tackle who's actually athletic. Because if there even is a big tackle in the Ivy League, he's probably not athletic.
He can't move. Yeah.
So, you know, how does he react to that? And that's something you don't know until you draft him, practice with him, and then put him on the field. So someone might fall in love with him and take him too high in the draft.
Now, there we go with my value system again. It's not that I necessarily don't like Zach Diassi. I don't like Zach Diassi in the third round.
Right.
You give me him in the fifth round, I'm saying let's take a chance. But then these guys, they shoot up. You start drafting them too high. I got to be honest with you. If anybody takes Anthony Gonzalez in the first round, you're going to have to pick me up off the ground.
It might happen, though.
Because that's a joke to me. That is an absolute joke. You take him over a Dwayne Bowe, a Paul Williams, a Fresno State, guys who played big-time college football and produced, that is an absolute joke. But, hey, that's how the draft works. They fall in love with these guys. And
just like we do. We're going to be wrong on some of the guys we fell in love with. We're going to be wrong on some of the guys we say stink. But Zach Diassi I'd put again in that special teamer because if you draft him, I think you probably get a special teamer for the next 5 or 6
years. But no matter what we're right or wrong on, they'll always go back to Oliver Hoyt because that's their one. That's their one.
And just one last thing on the Zach Diassi front. A source told me that he wouldn't expect the Patriots to draft Zach Diassi because Bill Belichick has sort of said that because of all the ties – Zach Diassi being close with Amanda Belichick, best friends, the Steve Diassi ties, the local, the ball boy, the whole thing, he wouldn't want to have to cut him. And if he was a late-round pick, or he would probably have to cut him if it came to that. So believe it or not, you know, that's just what a source told me they had heard.
Yeah. It's interesting.
I think it is interesting because, I mean, let's look at it. You know, as much as we make fun of Bill Belichick at times for being a robot, you know, there is going to be something when you cut your daughter's best friend.
There's a difference.
And your daughter calls and say, I was watching practice. He looked fine. Why'd you have to cut him?
Right.
He was better than Pierre Woods or Corey Mays. Why'd you have to cut him?
There's a difference. You
never
know.
If it's really that close, if you see another guy out of Florida who is just a nobody, another linebacker you could draft, you don't have the headache, the personal issues.
In the middle of all this combine stuff, we probably should say that the Patriots did make an addition to the coaching staff yesterday. They hired a gentleman named Bill O'Brien to be an offensive assistant. Now, we're not exactly sure what that entails.
Oh, it's not quality control?
No, but it just said offensive assistant.
But I like
them. I don't know what that means.
I think coaching under...
Seems kind of old to be a quality control guy.
Well, he's very experienced to be that.
But I like him. I think coaching under Krzyzewski for the last couple of years at Duke, he's really going to come in here and add some things.
Winning.
To
he's all about winning.
Tom? Duke football.
Oh, football. They got football?
Yeah, he spent the last couple of years as the offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach at Duke, He's also coached at Georgia Tech, I believe, under George O'Leary, a couple of other places. 14 years of experience. So that's why, if Andy is correct, and that's the first thing I thought of, Andy, offensive quality control, even though the Patriots don't generally have that as a titled position, quality control. It would seem to me 14 years experience is kind of old for that. That's an entry-level coaching
But if it's
position.
A guy, it's all college. If it's a guy just trying to break into the pros.
But do you think, Andy, I was thinking yesterday, maybe it's to take some things off some people's plate.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe
I think they
couple
had
of guys
a
got
small
too many
staff
things.
Last year. Even if you count the coaching assistants that don't have the title, even if you count them, they had a small staff compared to a lot of other teams, and I think they may have said...
Wait a minute. Did I miss something when I was in? They haven't hired a receivers coach, have they?
Yes, Caserio.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was before we left.
That's right. That's right. Okay.
So they have Caserio, you know, and Ivan Fears is still here for the backs.
Running backs. Pete Mangurian.
Ivan Fears with us at the free breakfast.
Dante, obviously, is still here with the offensive line. So all the positional coaches on offense seem to be taken care of, unless... because McDaniels does quarterbacks, drops. Right?
Yeah.
And offensive. Maybe they're going to take some of that away from. I don't know. But it just said offensive assistant. So.
Yeah. It's better than not having a coach. He's got experience.
I'll try to get a comment from Bill. I don't anticipate I'll be able to, but I will effort that to see exactly what kind of role he'll have.
I think we'll just let the statement speak for itself.
There was no statement.
Remember that? Oh, I thought there was a quote in the statement.
On Bill O'Brien?
Just a release.
Just a release.
Boston Globe has one then, I think.
Oh, did they?
I'm pretty sure.
Oh.
I read a quote by, I'm like 90% sure I read a quote about Bill O'Brien from Bill Belichick.
Oh, then it was, the pet.
So it was in a statement. It was in the Boston Globe.
Right. That's true. So, good point.
And we'll.
I should just start using those quotes and just say, I thought it was in a release.
It was a team statement. Release.
And we'll get to the Corey Dillon thing, too. That's big. A lot of emails on that. But one last thing I wanted to say on the combine is, there is a lot of short, small linebackers. Blades from Pittsburgh, Buster Davis.
Let's talk about Blades for a minute.
So that guy's 5'7".
He's 5'7". He's 200
You've never
pounds.
Seen anybody that
I mean,
small.
Ridiculous. And no one's lied more on their
I
measurements
don't even know
than
guy.
HB Blades.
That's the first guy that you guys have brought up that I don't know anything about.
Well, he's from the Blades family, Benny and Al and those people. And he's very productive in college for Wanstead at Pittsburgh, but I'm sorry. You know, it's kind of a Lofa Tatupu. He may have a pro career somewhere and do something because he's so instinctive. What?
You going to let me get to my Mike Singletary story?
What's the Mike, Mike Singletary story?
Andy and I were shocked.
Sorry, I was trying to analyze the draft, and Tom wants to tell a story about breakfast.
No, that's not what I want to talk about.
Was
I want to
talk
about
with you in
the
story?
No, Bilo's in the hallway
Andy
waiting
and
for
I,
Mike Mayock.
Andy and I were shocked at how small these guys are, and you often hear them compared to Mike Singletary. So, amazingly, the next day, Mike Singletary, who I don't think was staying at our hotel but came for the free breakfast, was in line to get eggs. And Andy and I said, he doesn't look that small. So Andy went and walked by him so we could judge his height. Let me tell you something. Buster Davis is nowhere near Mike Singletary. It's not even close. He's a good 6 feet.
Use Andy as a height gauge?
Well, that's the thing.
We know how tall I am. I'm 5'9".
If Mike Singletary was as short as Andy, we know he's short. Now, Mike Singletary was clearly taller.
And H.B. Blades was 5'9" or shorter.
Yes,
I was
and
looking
Buster
in
Davis,
eye.
Too, the other guy that a lot of people like, he was tiny compared to Singletary.
Well, the difference I'd say
he's
is jacked. Buster Davis is a fire hydrant who looks mean.
Yeah. I would compare him more to a Dexter Coakley.
Yeah.
Buster Davis, was... he was a very, very productive guy. Mm-hmm.
And I think he probably will be. I just don't think he can play here. It's another one of those cases where...
I agree with that.
And it's got people...
I don't think he fits.
I don't know if you guys saw the Ask PFW. Now people are saying, well, if there's nobody that fits a 3-4, why don't we go to a 4-3?
Yeah.
Because they're not going to do that.
There's people that
they'll
fit
find
the 3-4.
People. We might not even see them. We might be wrong on some of these guys, whatever. They'll find
John
some
Beeson.
Yeah, John
linebacker
Beeson.
Miami.
Shooting up the charts.
The other problem with that is what people don't realize is when the Patriots play a 4-3, and they have played plenty of 4-3, it's the same defense. They need the same kinds of players.
People basically want to go Tampa 2 because all these prospects seem to be Tampa 2 prospects.
Right. That's the thing
that
people
do say all year about the
Tampa
2?
Lose sight of. I hate the Tampa 2.
Yeah, I do too. And
I think you have to – I don't hate – I shouldn't say that. I just think that copying the Tampa 2 is not a smart thing. It's just like if someone wants to do exactly what the Patriots do with all the success they've had, you can't do it without the right people. People just want to say, well, the Tampa 2 works with Tony Dungy, so it can work for everybody. Well, no, it can't. Right. And you see the differences between Tony Dungy's Tampa 2 in Tampa and in Indy. I mean, there's no comparison whatsoever
right.
to those two defenses, because funny thing happens when you don't have Warren Sapp in his prime, and you don't have Derek Brooks in his prime, and you don't have John Lynch in his prime.
Speaking of the Tampa 2, if any of you Patriot fans are friends with Viking fans, you can tell them to start looking for that new head coach, because that Brad Childress is one big idiot. I mean, amazingly, someone asked him about, I thought it was the best question of the combine, about
blocking kicks.
No, it wasn't Goose. They said, well, the Patriots and Cardinals decided not even to run the ball against you and just threw it. And he basically said, well, what are you going to do? They got Tom Brady.
Right.
I mean, that was his answer pretty much. I mean, it was embarrassing. And if
they have Tom Brady.
You know, well, yeah, they can spread you out, Paul. Yeah, they got Tom Brady. Well,
so. No one else can do that? So, in other words, the team with arguably, I don't know, best case scenario, the 20th best set of wide receivers in football?
Can spread you out.
Can spread you out.
Yeah.
What do you think a team with good receivers does?
Brad Childress and Michael Felger go to the same school of football. Both think you can't be beaten
right.
if you spread
them out.
Brad Childress can't defend it, and Michael Felger thinks it can't be defended.
I mean, seriously, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Just like to point out, if we ever had a huge listenership, we would have so many enemies. We're taking shots at Belo, Goose, Felger, the league.
We like Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, I liked Mike Tomlin.
Well,
I realized he wasn't a player.
Right, I was going to say, he's either going to be a good coach or he's going to be the second best safety on that team.
Well,
and breaking news,
he's still thinking about, you know, what he's going to do defensively.
3-4, 4-3, 3-3, whatever we need to do.
Whatever we need to do.
This breaking news, Lane Kiffin, no chance. No chance. Well, didn't speak with him, just looked at him, said, no chance.
I wanted to give him a wedgie.
I thought you had something good.
Nope.
For me.
I saw him sitting down with Sirius.
That's the best you can come up with. No. I saw Paul, him. I didn't even hear
let
him
me,
speak.
No, let me paint the
He's
picture for you.
He's never shaved a day in his life.
Let me paint the picture for you. We're standing out in the hall. He walks by us to the Sirius booth. Andy goes to me, is that Wayne Kiffin? And I go, yeah, I think so. He looks, 1, 2, 3, no chance. That's exactly
no
how
chance.
It went.
Just none.
Didn't hear. Did he?
So
guy
Lane
even
Kiffin,
open his
based
mouth.
On total,
he's a skinny,
based on appearances, he can't coach.
Faced, never shaved.
What does that have
confident.
To do with coaching?
People are pulling him in different directions. I don't know if you know, but he needs to stand up and tell Warren Sapp what to do. And Warren Sapp's going to say, "Bleep you,
no chance."
No chance.
Look,
unless
I
he's going to cut every player on
that
team.
I'm not going to try to be...
Art Shell's a Hall of Famer, a big fat guy that people should listen to and in some way respect,
but I'm
and
not
he
even,
couldn't control
I'm
those
not
buffoons.
Even trying to play devil's advocate here. I am certainly not in the camp that thinks that Lane Kiffin is the answer in Oakland.
I'm still calling him Wayne.
And that the odds are on his side, okay? I am certainly not saying that. But please tell me you've based this a little bit more than on just appearances.
No, didn't even hear him talk. Just saw him.
Nope. Just saw him.
The guy's livelihood is at stake. Please tell me you have more.
Dragging him in different directions. He was getting. He was red.
Now he's exaggerating.
I didn't like it. Oh no, I watched.
He was red.
He was embarrassed.
One other interesting notes I thought from a coaches and a GMs. Jeff Fisher said no contact with Pac-Man Jones. He was not happy at all. Like Paul said yesterday. I wouldn't be. We wouldn't
he
be
does
surprised
not play
if
another
that's,
game.
That's the last
does
time
not
you
play
see
another
him
game for Tennessee.
Tennessee.
And I don't think you should.
And
play another
Jeff
game
Fisher almost alluded to that, that he might not play another game. With
I
them.
Think regardless of what happens in terms of his legal trouble for this particular incident, I don't think he ever plays for Tennessee again.
I agree.
And I think if he's found guilty, I don't think he should ever play again in the NFL.
Well, it's already brought about talk. This whole three strike policy
yeah.
and.
Which I think we should get into too. Maybe not today because
right.
we have
yeah, we got a ton
about,
of emails.
I think that three strike policy is awesome. Tom and I talked about it yesterday. I think it's a great move.
I think the one problem you find in that is defining the strikes.
Arrest.
So if you're arrested for anything, that's a strike.
Yes.
So when you're in a bar
anybody?
And a guy slugs you and you swing back and you both get arrested, that's strike one.
Right.
Okay.
Three times, Andy?
I'm just saying.
It takes three.
People get pulled over all the time.
Fred Kirsch.
Right, right.
By the way, he wasn't here with us today. I should have mentioned his draft analysis. You have to wait till next week for that. this is the same Fred Kirsch when Paul said yesterday in his office, come on, everybody knows who Gaines Adams is. Fred even knows who Gaines Adams is. And Fred looked up and goes, I don't know who Gaines Adams is. So there you go.
He's going to be mad at us.
And it'll be him and I during the draft for a good 8 hours.
But, possibly.
Oh, yeah, that's a high possibility.
I'd like to shoot it down, but I might not be able to.
Fred going, that's a reach. With his R-Lads book in front of him.
Now we've added our lads to the list of people we're taking shots at. Oh, we're the best.
No, I just think, nice being perfect. I think that when you have the three strikes policy, and we don't have to get that much into this because I know we have tons of emails we need to get to, but that allows you to be in the wrong place at the wrong time once. It allows you to do something wrong and just flat out make a mistake and do something wrong and still be okay. But I don't know anybody who's been arrested three times that isn't a dirtball. I don't know anybody. I know a lot of people that have been arrested.
I don't know anybody that's been arrested three times.
I know a lot of
you guys both do. You're shady.
I'm saying I know a lot of people who
I don't want.
But my point
is his last name Casale?
No, amazingly.
My point being is there's a lot of people I grew up with that weren't exactly the highest moral fiber people that I've known, okay? I don't know none of those guys three times without them being really, really bad people. So I just think, you know, everybody wants to throw the Duke kids, the Duke arrest. Well, that's one arrest. Now, at the very least, I think it was totally unfair what happened to those kids and all that. But at the very least, they didn't do something. They weren't doing what they should have been doing.
Right.
Okay? So that allows you to do something once.
Well, that's
like
the
if
only
you're Pac-Man Jones, your past has prevented you the ability, in my opinion, to be in those places.
That's the thing I would like about the three-strike rule is if, for most people, you'd hope that if they got a strike because they're young, because they're 22 and they have $10 million in the bank and they go out and they do something stupid, at some point you hope it just says, well, you know what? I can't go to a strip club at 3 in the morning. I can't
right.
be here with Snoop Dogg and this whatever.
Right. And that's why I say now, that's why I say a zero-tolerance policy. That's why, you know, I would say a zero-tolerance policy, that's not fair because now
right.
a good person can get caught in a bad situation and lose his livelihood. But three times is a lot,
yeah.
I think.
And to recap, the guy rich enough to have a vacuum on every floor of his house doesn't know someone who's gotten arrested three times.
I don't know. I know people. I don't know anybody who's got arrested three times that isn't a bad person, I say.
Oh,
I know plenty of people.
I just wanted to take the vacuum shot.
Let me tell you something. I know a little something about being on the wrong side of the law, okay?
I know
a lot of people.
I thought the other interesting thing was Ozzie Newsome. I thought he was one of the best speakers there. Proved that you can actually build a winning team and actually stand up at a podium and talk too. Said that if the things he's hearing are going to happen in free agency, it's going to be mind-boggling.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure the things he's hearing is better than the things like someone like Tom Casale's hearing, being that he's in charge of I would call the best drafting team in professional football over the last 5, 6, 7 years, the Baltimore Ravens. And there's no chance that Adalius Thomas will return there. I don't believe any of us think that, right?
Well, no, and I'd fall back on another thing he said I thought was a great quote, and he said he's honest with his players.
Right.
He falls back on when he was a player, and he tells them, if you have a chance to make a lot of money, go make a lot of money.
And
because
I thought it was interesting.
I liked that.
And I thought it was interesting when he did the way he said, if things are going to happen the way I'm hearing,
right.
Which means bye-bye Adalius Thomas coming to New England.
Right.
So. And I got to be honest, I think Banta Kane might even get decent money in this free agent market. It doesn't.
San Francisco. If they don't get Adalius Thomas, maybe their fallback is Tully Banta Kane.
And we're hearing Daniel Graham, possibly Minnesota, possibly Cincinnati, or some
definitely
teams that have popped
paid.
Out. Yep, popped up. So
I heard $10 million signing bonus possibly for him.
There's money to spend.
Somebody told me yesterday, $5 million a year with a $10 million signing bonus.
So like $25 million deal with a $10 million up front kind of thing.
Now who
$5.25 maybe?
Who was it Andy? Nolan who said that that's going to be it? This is the last year. I think it might have been Nolan.
Yeah,
who said,
one of those guys.
This is next year. It's going to go back to normal because
this
all this extra
one.
Cap space,
which is stupid because teams just haven't figured it out yet. If that truly does happen, and I believe it will happen. People look at it and say this huge increase, and they say, "Oh, we can spend like drunken sailors again." Well, no, you can't. It's going to go back into the normal 6 or 7 or 8% increase.
What he was saying about not
and
getting too
be,
crazy
yeah.
in free agency.
Well, it's so unfortunate because there's just not a ton of talent that's going to be out there. Mm-hmm. Some of these guys that have gotten franchised.
That's even a better point.
They're going to over. You know, you got $30 million. Doesn't mean you have to spend it.
Yeah, and Patriots fans were kind of excited, but this is not the best year to have two first-round picks and $15
right.
million dollars to
right.
spend. There's not much
yeah.
out there, really.
Free agency and the draft are limited.
So,
I got to tell you, if I were doing free agency this year and I had the $30 million and my owner says, you know what, you can spend it if you think it's the best thing, I'd be doing like the Vikings did a couple of years ago with Antoine Winfield. If I saw a guy, even if it's Daniel Graham, that I think...
Just go out and get him.
And I pay him a roster bonus for this year of $10 million so that maybe I overpaid for this year, but he doesn't hurt me down
the
road.
Right.
He has normal salaries down the road. I can cut him at any time. Because to me, if you overpay a guy and now he's on the books for 5 years at ridiculous cap numbers, you've set yourself back rather than improving your team.
Oh,
so if you if the money really is burning a hole in your pocket, use it for this year, but don't let it hurt
and
you moving forward.
Speaking of overpaying people who aren't worth it, Corey Dillon expected to be released.
I was going Brian Lowe.
expected to be released on Friday, it's been reported. We have a ton of emails about him. If you guys want to get into that stuff, and I'm sure we'll have draft stuff in there.
It's going to be a four-hour show because we
got to get to some of these.
It's Edwin from Hampton, Virginia. He said, I thought that around the second round the Pats would draft a safety, but in light of Corey Dillon's retirement, he's not really retiring, I think that they are going to draft Tony Hunt in the second round. He has a running style like Corey Dillon, only he is young and athletic. What do you think the chances are the Pats will pick up a safety like Michael Lewis in free agency? I know that his production dropped last year, but I think that will make him a steal in this year's free agent class. He's young, athletic, and talented under Bill Belichick, and the guy could be a monster and a physical player like Rodney Harrison.
What's up, Paul Perillo?
So he's wondering about Tony Hunt and Michael Lewis. Hunt, he's a loser.
We like Tony Hunt, but is the second round too high for a running back? Is that big of a need that you need to invest a second-round pick to get a second running back?
Well, here's the thing I'll say. The running back class to me is not like last year.
Terrible.
We thought there was a bunch of guys like those Jones, Drew, and guys you could kind of pick Jerome Harrison in the middle rounds there and get.
No,
this year it looks like it just you look at the rankings, it just drops. Darius Walker ran a disgusting 40 time. That he was a guy that we thought possibly. If I'm the Patriots, I don't think I take Hunt in the second round. I like him too. I think he's
I like
a big
Hunt, and I'm
guy.
Not saying that he's not a second round pick. I'm saying is the second round, regardless of who's available, is the second round too high of a pick to invest in that need? Don't you have bigger needs?
Or well, if it was a good player, I would say no. But I think my feeling is I agree with Tom. It's a terrible. I think there's a big jump from Peterson to Lynch. Then I think there's an even bigger jump down as you move down the ladder.
Sure, I agree with
so
both of you guys.
So a guy like Tony Hunt, who might be up there in that next range after those two, is probably going to go higher
than he should
in a normal draft. So I wouldn't be willing to go there. You know, there's going to be some guys, again, later. You know, Michael Bush is kind of a wild card.
And that's the way I wrote it in the SPFW.
The injury and coming back. Maybe you can get him later, and you end up with more bang for your buck, a first-round type talent coming off an injury.
Because there's not much question that he would have been a first-round
pick. Right,
you know. So I think a guy like him, if you could,
but
steal,
you never know. As we say, there's a lot of time
well,
now. All
gonna,
of a sudden, he's going to be on the rise, and
he is going to get a chance to work out. Right, he's going to participate in a pro day,
and all of a sudden, he might be the second back off the board. You know, when it's all said and done, come later.
Michael
April.
Lewis, you know, his production didn't drop. He lost his job. There's a difference there. He was no longer starting, and we had, I think...
Technically, that makes your production drop, right?
But you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's not like a guy started 16 games and didn't produce as much as he has in the past.
But
the guy wasn't producing and lost his job.
But wouldn't you agree, though, he is kind of the type of guy the Patriots look for, someone who's been productive at one point?
That is exactly the kind of guy they've signed the last 2 or 3 years, and they've failed to find any.
Well, that's not my fault. I'm just saying, I'm just pointing out we were at the draft looking for white guys, and it's not my fault. That's just...
So my I think is it PJ that is the big Eagles fan? Well, he's from the Philadelphia area. I shouldn't say he's a Patriots fan, but he gave us the scouting report on Michael Lewis, and it wasn't overly favorable. Now that doesn't mean the Patriots won't say, well, this guy has produced in the past, and maybe we can get something out of him. But
take the other Eagles safety.
Me too. But to
he's the kind of guy I'm looking
to
for.
To sign a guy like that, that's losing playing time because of a lack of productivity, to me, yeah, you might be able to get him, but to say that to do that and expect to get a guy quote like Rodney Harrison, the way that I think that's very far fetched.
Yeah. Right. This is what you do: you trade your first, your second, your two first round picks, your second round pick to Minnesota. You come up, you take LaRon Landry. Forget about it. That's it. End of story.
Just so you know, this is the part of the story. This is the part of the show where Tom actually dates LaRon Landry.
Hey, I love those mean-looking safeties. He's mean. He was all business. Possibly, maybe, you know, Reggie, like you guys, let Reggie Nelson, Griffin from...
I like Griffin. He's my guy.
Texas.
I like Griffin and Rouse.
I don't like Nelson as much as a lot of other people.
See, I like Nelson.
His
like
size
the fact,
is the only issue.
But the fact that he can play corner, he can play safety, that, to me, kind of... You know, the pay,
he's the guy that range. Every play the Florida defense made all year, Vern Lundquist, credited to Reggie Nelson, the eraser, you know,
yeah.
and all that. But I think he's a nice player, but I don't think he's that special.
All right. Well,
Paul down on Reggie Nelson.
Nick in San Diego says,
I don't love him.
Welcome back, boys. Now give us everything you saw. No, we can't wait for Fred to get something to eat. I know you're tired and cranky because they almost made Andy buy two seats for his football-shaped head on that little crop duster Fred got you seats to on to Indy. But give us the info. Patrick Willis, I was having dreams of getting him at 28.
Nope.
No chance. And now with his average 40 time under 4.5, with all his fellow linebackers running really slow, I'm scared that he won't be there at 24. That's probably correct.
I say... He starts with a pick that's a one and then a something after it.
Yeah, probably like the 60. But they could, if he comes down that close, they might be able to trade up if they really like
right.
him.
Eight picks, say to get to 60 and 24.
Right.
That's still...
It's going to be tough.
If they want him and it's like 14, that's one of those times where I'd have trouble being a GM knowing
right.
when to pull the trigger, when not
exactly.
to pull the trigger.
Ooh. He said, can the Pats sit tight and wait for him at 24? Well,
no.
we don't think so. Would you move up for a guy like Willis?
Yes.
What else did you see about him in Indy? He's very respectful when he talked. Him and Calvin Johnson, from everything I know, are very good people, character guys, too. As far as I know, there's nothing wrong with Patrick Willis.
I was going to say, on a next-tier level, I think Patrick Willis is like Calvin Johnson. I have not seen one thing yet that tells me I wouldn't want him on my team, that he can be a productive starter. You know, he's just obviously not a top five type
right.
talent.
And
he's that next
tier. There's something that kind of bothers me. I hate hearing, oh, he can't cover. Other than Donnie Edwards, tell me how many
right.
great coverage linebackers there are. Listen,
right.
this guy can play football. He might get beat by a Ben Watson type tight end down the field every now and again. I'll take it because he's going to make more than enough plays to make up for that.
And how, I mean, I just think he has the skills where you say with some good coaching, he might be able to turn into a pretty good cover linebacker. It's just in college, I just don't think that's as big a deal
right.
for a linebacker. You're playing a lot of zone. He's just dropping.
But
you know,
he has the skills to do that.
Yeah, I think, I would take my chances with him on a running back out of the backfield more than I would, you know, Mike Vrabel or Teddy Bruschi
right.
now.
I agree.
I think he has the athleticism to maybe just stay with him.
He says, I think you guys would agree that everything about the NFL is as technologically up-to-date as possible, and if there is a way to make money off something, they will find it. So why is the NFL Combine such a horse and buggy event? I have never been there, but it seems to me that this world of the Internet, Fred, that's the box that has all the pictures that you use to find porn in cable TV. Why is it so impossible to find results online until days later? Well, I think that's because they have to confirm them.
Right.
And it's weird. Like because even at the combine, they'll write them on the board, then they'll come in and erase them and put. So I guess they have to do something.
The other issue is there's no such thing as an official time, I don't believe, because the NFL Network has theirs, and then every team has a scout there getting their information.
Right.
And I heard Ron Borges at the combine telling a joke about it. All these guys at pro days and combines, they're all lined up, and we've all seen the pictures right at the finish for the 40.
Mm-hmm.
All their stopwatch, and as soon as they click it to stop it, the first thing they do is turn to each other and say, "What'd you get?
Right.
What'd you get?" And because no one wants to be wrong, no one wants to be way off.
Right.
They're checking what the time is. So there's not really a true. This is what the guy did. I don't know if they average or if they throw some out or where they publish them, but. Everybody has different numbers because everybody has a different
right.
stopwatch or time.
And I know this year, you know, with the Wonderlic scores, they've actually changed it a little bit to try to conceal them.
Right.
They've had them, they're graded off-site, not at the combine, and they're supposedly only issuing the results to the GMs.
Right.
And now you can take from that, if a result is made public, you can blame a GM for it
right.
because those are the only people that know.
Well, it'll trickle down.
Supposedly.
Once the GM tells the coaches and the scouts, you know, what the guy did, then all those guys could possibly leak it.
Well, and then he goes on to say, the NFL made the draft a media sensation, but they let the combine sit mired in 1985. Why doesn't the NFL update the guy? I totally disagree with that.
It's
3 years
up.
Ago, you've never seen anything.
Right.
Now it's on TV,
it's on TV.
24
now
hours
there's
a day.
Talk that next
the
year
fans
be fans
might be
there.
In. Yeah, the NFL is really doing it. And let me tell you something. you don't get much boring than the combine.
I was going to say, this is a completely, totally nothing event.
We thought
that
years
that
ago,
people are talking about now for weeks.
Yeah, years ago, people used to say to me, how can you sit there and watch that draft? That's got to be the most boring thing in the world.
Still
but at
is.
Least,
but I still say that.
See, I think at least with there, though, you're so interested in what your team's going to do because it's the day that they actually select them.
Right.
The combine is just a bunch of people running around doing drills we don't even know what they're supposed to be doing and talking to guys who all say the same thing. Trust me, it's boring. And to get this much coverage out of it, that's pretty good from the NFL Network.
So boring that I dropped Tom off at his house after 5 days at the combine, you know, 10, 12-hour days. By the time I get home and check my email, there's an email from Tom that says, so I just got home and I'm watching the NFL Combine on TV and I really don't like this guy and I like this guy.
It was linebackers. What do you want me to do? It was the big group. Nick closes with
loser.
Love the show, even you, Fred. Paul, not too bad last week, but I would have gone to your secret weapon, Gary. Nick
Gary.
In San Diego.
Gary.
Thanks, Nick.
Should have pulled out Gary, but Gary was busy playing cards.
I incorporated Gary quite a bit last week.
We got a lot of forewords and like advertisements. What's going on here, Gary? Aren't you
somebody
supposed to
give
be
out
in?
Our?
Are you in the right?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
Someone's saying Paul did a good Joseph. Oh, PJ Nacarelli.
Yeah, delete it.
Yeah, you can delete that because I know there's a shot coming somewhere. He says, anybody thinks that was a good job last week, not so much in agreement with.
He said, "Hey guys, after hearing that Corey Dillon was moving on, I immediately thought of Brian Leonard. Why?" Do you see the Pats trading down from one of their two first-round picks to grab Leonard in the early to middle part of the second round? Possible. It looks like Maroney will be the man, and Leonard could play the role of the guy who can get the tough yards near the goal line. Also, is there a chance of getting Dre Bly in some sort of trade? I think Dre Bly is good, not great, but him and Asante Samuel would make a great tandem together.
They all be tremendous.
Yeah,
I like Dre Bly.
So do I.
You move Ellis Hobbs, and now's your nickel guy. That's
I wouldn't
very
give
good
up
secondary.
A whole lot to get him, but I mean, I think that he's.
What'd you give? Third round, second round?
Oh, sure.
First round,
third.
No, not a first.
Third.
Okay.
They also have an awesome D line, and the defense would look really good with those guys, and maybe a Patrick Willis or even a London Fletcher Baker playing linebacker. Well, apparently he's on the Redskins, so you can't get
that's
him.
The guy.
That's
yeah.
the guy.
He's already signed, essentially.
Yeah. But not. Last but not least, I get a video podcast downloaded to my iPod from the Philadelphia Eagles every day called the Daily Eagle.
Now, so maybe he is an Eagles fan.
I have wondered for a while now why you guys don't have PVN podcasted. It doesn't seem like it would be that hard considering you already do the video every day. Great show, guys. P.S. Paul did a great job last week in a tough spot. I thought he would take 30 minutes dissecting each email, but ironically enough, he had the whole forum to talk, and instead he answered the questions quickly and thoroughly. Awesome job.
Wow.
Ironically enough, that was the mild, backhanded compliment.
No, no. Well, because that was the brainwashing that you give everybody that I never stop talking,
well,
like I'm Brian Lowe.
I think our listeners are astute enough to observe on their own, listen to you, and
thank you,
make
PJ.
Opinions about your style.
I think you were overly complimentary because even I could not look at myself in the mirror and say that was a really good job, but it was nice of you to say so.
We got some more
hey,
emails
Ozzie
on
Newsom
Dylan.
Is on in the background on Gary's Tecmo Bowl back when he was a player. 3 catches, 60 yards.
This is Chris. He says, thank God that one down Dylan has hung up his boots. I am very happy and grateful for the service that Dylan has provided for the Patriots, except for last season.
You're going to see Corey Dylan somewhere next year.
Yes.
Not in a New England Patriots
I
uniform.
Would say that the odds are 90-10.
I say they're 98-2.
Well, see, if no one wants him.
Somebody will want him. There's money to spend. Some team will say, you know what, he's a veteran back.
Yes.
He's got 13 touchdowns. He can still get in the end zone. He helps us.
Just and
New York Giants.
Definitively.
They got
I
no
tiki.
They have one back.
I can tell you this. I spoke to his agent on Monday, Steve Feldman. He does not plan to retire. This is nothing. This has nothing to do with retirement. This has everything to do with he did not want to come back here and be Lawrence Maroney's backup.
Right.
He talked.
He wants to be a backup.
They talked. They talked to the Patriots. They talked to the Patriots, and from those conversations, they concluded that they wanted him. The Patriots wanted Dylan to be an 8 to 10 carry a game guy. Corey thinks he's more than that. This is Steve Feldman, his agent, talking. Corey thinks he's more than that. He said retirement is an option, but it is not in the plan. So this has nothing to do with,
right.
I've had enough. And I had thought, nothing to do with
I
that.
I thought that was pretty, I mean, it was reported at first that Dylan was going to retire, and that report was wrong. So, but I thought since then we've all realized that he doesn't, he's not going to retire.
Right.
Isn't that like public knowledge now?
Well, plus you could take it a step further and say the initial report that said he was going to retire, it also said that he plans to ask for his release.
Which makes no sense.
So he can retire, which made no sense from the beginning. And anybody who read that story and thought he was going to retire didn't really read it very closely.
Unless he's going to ask for his release so he can retire as a Cincinnati Bengal,
right,
because he loves Cincinnati so much. I'm
right.
sure he wants to stand there with a Dylan
jersey. That
would
be an awkward press conference.
Yeah. The reason why I give that 10% window, the only reason why I do that he might retire, is because there's always a possibility no one wants to give him any money to come in and be. I don't think anybody's going to let him be the man.
No, I don't either. But I think people will tell him you can compete.
Right. So,
New York Giants, Brandon Jacobs.
But I don't think he does it for the minimum.
Oh, I don't think so.
The word
million will be involved.
Yeah, I think he needs to get some money and he needs to have a chance.
But I think in this market he'll get some money and he'll have a chance.
I think the Jets.
The Jets?
Yep.
Because Leon Washington could stay right in that little, you know, kind of part-time role.
Could be a nice somewhat trade. Barlow comes here, Dylan goes to the Jets.
How about the Colts?
Yep.
Rhodes out. He splits time with a die, scores touchdowns for Peyton Manning on the goal line, and wins another title.
Makes a lot of sense.
He's not going to Cleveland. Okay, Corey Dillon is either playing for Baltimore, he's either playing for the Colts, he's playing for somebody that has a chance.
But that's why I
give
you that 10%, Tom. Because if Oakland comes to him and says, you know, you can be our guy, you know, we're getting rid of Lamont Jordan for whatever reason, you could be our man, he's not going there.
See, and I say, even if he doesn't have a job by camp, eventually he plays. Because eventually somebody gets hurt and then is scrambling and has some money and says, you know what, we didn't want to do it the first time, but we'll give you $1.5 million, and you're the guy now because the other guy's hurt.
Yeah.
Wherever it is, somebody blows an ACL somewhere, whatever.
But we can all agree that this doesn't have anything to do with him just having enough, having had enough, and wants to retire.
No.
He didn't want to be Maroney's backup, much like the three of us said all year long last year, and on this show, were roundly criticized for saying that.
Yeah, but I thought he was such a nice guy.
He wanted out. There's
Paul's quite a braggart.
Such a good
There's
teammate.
Nothing more than this. I said all three of us.
No, I know. I'm just kidding. Because Tom Curran called Tom Casale a braggart.
I wasn't even saying anything good about myself. I was taking a shot. Tom Curran was drunk the whole time. Tom Curran, if you're listening,
another one of the
you
list.
Know you're drunk. You didn't even know what was going on. You kept asking us, have you seen Gil Brandt? You thought it was kind of funny the first time, but the 80th time it wasn't really that funny. Jesus.
True.
Salt from Orlando chimes in. Salt's always been one of my favorite emailers.
Oh,
I like
God.
Salt. First off, I will start by saying that Andy's rant last week about the wall shot knocked him up a notch in my standings of my favorite PFW contributor.
Nice.
But Tom is still in the lead, and I'll continue to stay
I
there.
Just like that somebody appreciated it and knew what I was talking about. You losers.
Not that you guys care.
I just never heard that term.
Or maybe
Fred
you do.
Called it a jize.
That's okay. At least I'm still in last.
he's got some questions. Question one. I'm under the assumption that if an offensive player fumbles the ball and it goes out of bounds, not in the end zone, the clock stops and the offense still maintains possessions of the ball. Is that true? Fumbles the ball out of bounds, not in the end zone. Does the clock stop? Offense maintains possession.
The clock would stop, but it would restart if it's in a regular part of the game.
Right.
Yes.
They would put the ball in the middle of the field and wind start it again as soon as it's placed for replay.
Okay. Question
Unless
two.
It's the last 2 minutes of the first half
right.
or the last 5 minutes
right.
of the game.
Yeah, that.
Question two. If so.
And unless it's a first down, because then they'd have to move the ball back or something, right? Didn't they change that rule?
Yeah, there's something that if the ball goes forward, it goes back to the. I don't know. There's some.
There's
funny,
another quirky rule there.
Funny
but
fumble rules.
We don't know that answer.
Yeah, I'll have to look. I'll have to research that a little bit. But the clock stopping, the clock would stop only, you know, to set the play, and then once they got the ball, it's just like a completed pass, and the guy runs out of
right.
bounds.
Right.
The clock would stop when the ball goes out of bounds, but immediately restart.
Right.
Question two. If so, hypothetically late in the game, 2 minute drill, no timeouts left, say someone receives a pass and is close to the sideline, but sees a defender coming and knows that they will not be able to make it out of bounds. What is stopping them from pretending to fumble the ball out of bounds to stop the clock?
That's a penalty.
Yeah, you can't throw the ball. That was the Raiders game. Is that the,
yeah,
is
well,
that
was an illegal forward pass,
right.
but you can't fumble intentionally. By rule, they would mark you down by contact inbounds is what they would do.
As they should.
I don't think it would be a penalty in terms of yardage, but they would rule you down by contact.
Now we have the follow-up email. What if you're really good at it and make it look like it's a fumble?
We'll delete that. Request. Can Andy and Tom just talk about the defensive tackle Okoye? I'm not interested in him as a future Patriot, but his story intrigues me. He's graduating at 19. Yep. He played 4 years on his college team. How big is this guy, and how big was this guy when he was 15? When I was 15, I was a freshman in high school and was lucky to make the freshman team. This guy was going up against people 4 years older than him. Salt from Orlando.
It is an amazing story.
It's one tremendous. Of the more amazing stories I've ever heard in my life. I can't believe it. We saw him at the Combine. He looks like he's 17, which means he could have actually been, you know, right. the people that come over here from, like, Nigeria and stuff, they say sometimes lie about their age. He could have been 12
right.
from the way he looks. He looks really young.
He's
young.
They usually lie the other
Although,
way.
Yeah. Here, look at this, Paul. I look at him. He's got a baby face. He's going to succeed. He's no Lane Kiffin. He'll be fine in the NFL.
Of course, that's 300 pounds he has behind him.
So he
too.
Wasn't all red and unshaven?
I don't think he's ever shaved.
No. It just doesn't look
See?
Like it.
So he's fine. But he's going to be a superstar.
But you know, the thing is, I don't think he's a nose tackle. He's the
no.
Tampa 2.
Yes.
You know, I keep saying this, but this guy really is one of those Tampa 2 guys.
That's the draft.
He's 300-pounder, though, isn't he?
Yeah, but he's not. But he's not a Vince Wilfork 300-pounder.
Not
you know
a stout.
What I mean?
He's
No. I'm not saying to say that he can't be a nose tackle. I agree with you guys.
But no, but
Vince Wilfork's 350. I don't care what they list
him. From what I've read, no one thinks that this guy is a nose tackle. No,
but Mike Mayock did say that he still thinks he could put on 20 to 30 pounds.
Well, he's 19.
Yeah, you don't know.
And end up being one of those guys who can play at the nose.
Paul was skinny at 19, and look at him now.
Well, if I had gotten the opportunity, Andy, it's interesting you said no, but if he gets the opportunity to go to a pro team and get the nutrition and the weight training at the pro level at 19 years old, by 22, he could have a whole different body type.
And he was, I thought he handled himself very well, you know, that probably could have been an overwhelming situation.
Obviously,
for a pretty
he's
young
got
guy.
A rare level of maturity.
And he clearly comes, his parents are very intelligent. That's where it came from.
Yeah, maturity is
dad
the key
is
word
a principal.
There. Yeah, principal.
They came, so, very well educated family, very well educated before he came to the U.S., then succeeded when he got here. I think it's a very cool story. And I've already seen, which I think is a little unfair, they're already projecting, well, he's so young. If he keeps growing and improving at the rate he has already, he might be the greatest player to ever play the game because he's so, well, let's ease off.
Right.
Let's just let him get into the NFL, make some plays, have a good career.
Where is he projected?
First round, middle.
Yeah,
so what I would say
round.
If I was
Probably
a team, if I was a team selecting him, I'd say, you know what? We're going to draft him now, but 2 years from now is when we're going to get the player worthy of his draft spot because
right.
he's still growing and developing.
And you might have to.
You got
to
take a chance on it. It's kind of almost like NBA, like when a high school guy comes
right.
out. And
yeah. But the trouble is, the team might not be, they might need him.
I was just saying, you rely on your first round picks in the
I'm not saying he won't play, but I'm saying you might not get the Pro Bowler until 2 or 3 years down the road.
Right,
the guy
but
like
I just
this.
Hope that doesn't hurt him in any way.
It could.
He's a young
but
guy,
but he seems
confidence.
Like he's pretty level-headed.
He does. He seems to have the whole package,
well,
but, you know, you look at, like, a Vince Young. Ideally, mm-hmm. he wouldn't have played last
right.
year. He came out, he had some success, but ideally, he would have sat on the sideline, watched Steve McNair, probably ideally, you know, play, learn from him. I think this guy would be in the same situation, but when you're drafted in the first round and they hand you a couple sure. $1 million and you have no defensive linemen, well, you know what? They're probably going to put you on the football field.
Yeah, they're going to have some patience with a guy like that.
Right.
You can't just expect him to go to the Pro Bowl like Leron Landry from day one.
And it's funny, you mentioned the NBA. That's why he's a guy I'd keep an eye on. When I read bust that he stinks, and then he's a 23-year-old free
right.
agent, restricted free agent, now I'm putting in an offer because I'm saying, you know what? He should just be getting out of college now. Like these NBA guys, they don't turn into superstars overnight, most of them. They take some time to develop. So he could be a guy that you get later on.
Jermaine O'Neal is
yeah.
one of the.
He could be a guy you get later on.
That's the difference is in the NBA, you don't necessarily have to have that first round pick make an immediate impact.
Right.
Whereas in the NFL, you kind of do.
Right.
Even if you're a good team, you're expecting your first round picks to be contributors.
Right. But if
I would think that he would be a contributor.
If he struggles, I'm keeping him on my highlighted list for 3 years from now, 4 years from now, when he might be available, and I'll say, you know what, I'll give him a chance.
A lot of times, the guys that you know they come over from Africa too, and they have a situation. You know, I think Tamba Ali was like that
mm-hmm.
Last year. He had a similar kind of
yep.
a you know story. I don't want to say this is a similar story, but he also I thought possessed a lot of the same kinds of traits. Whereas he was very polished, had a lot of life experience for a guy his age and shot into the first round, you know, and I think he had a pretty decent year.
He did.
I mean, with Kansas City,
he had
right?
a pretty good rookie year.
And you know,
the difference I'd say
I just
him,
think there's a maturity level sometimes for these guys that have been through so much in life.
But
that
I think
football
he's been
is not
more.
Everything. To, you know
I
what I'm
think
saying?
This guy has led more of a now I don't
normal
know for
life.
Sure. Yeah, a normal life. He's from Africa, but he was well schooled in Africa.
Well, that's why I didn't want to say I wanted to get
Ali
stories.
Was like walking down streets where
yeah.
dead bodies
people
were everywhere.
Dying, yeah.
Like so, there's a little bit of a you know I think he was more mature because life came in, punched him in the mouth, and said, "You better be mature right now, or you're not going to make it."
Right.
Gonzalez catching with his body up there. Misha, we'll take one more, Gary, then we'll go to break. The subject is Chris Houston, who I was figuring we would hear quite a bit about. Hey, guys, just wanted to get your opinion on Chris Houston out of Arkansas. He ran the fastest 40 and put up 27 reps on the bench, according to the combine results on the Pat site. I have never seen him play, so if he is a combine stud but a piece of you-know-what on the field, don't rip me too bad. Tom is God. Paul's pretty good, too. And, Andy, you should just jump off a tall building.
Yeah,
P.S.
Suck it.
Just kidding with you, Andy. You're not so bad. You just can't hold Tom's jock. And I didn't even make that one up. Like I do sometimes. Every now I'll throw a P.S. in where I make it up. That one's
I wouldn't
real.
Want to hold his jock. I'm not gay like him.
I don't want to bend anybody over.
Yeah.
Hey, you get what you get.
Apparently, you'll take anything
anyway.
We're
taking a break after that email.
Well, we have to talk about it, but they send in another one right after that. Sorry for not writing this my first email, but can you also give me your opinion on Jason Hill? Everything
love him.
That I said in the first email still applies. Andy, you still can't hold Tom's jock.
Come over here, and I'll show you what's in my jock, punk.
We'll take Chris Houston first. Unfortunately, I didn't get to talk to Chris Houston. I was doing the cornerbacks because Aaron Ross from Texas talked at the same time, and I went with Ross. Houston, Mike Mayock has been preaching all week that he was going to blow up at the combine. He was hearing people tell him that, and he was right. Played pretty good against Dwayne Jarrett, I know, but that's a guy we're really going to have to watch on film and kind of break down.
According to him, now this is just him. I haven't seen a ton of him play, probably at all. He's a man-to-man guy.
Mm-hmm.
He spent his entire and did very well, very confident, is willing to basically tell you who he played against, what that guy did against him. He was listing Jarrett's and Meacham's and these guys that he's played against and in his mind shut down, but it has been a man-to-man kind of guy in college.
If you think of him in terms of they said, you know, Houston Nutt says, you know, Chris, you take
yeah, that
you take
was
Jarrett.
You clearly
know, kind of like Ty Lawler in his
yes,
prime here.
No question.
Which could be a concern.
Which could be a concern okay. Because if he's not doing that at the next level, how comfortable is he doing things in zones and multiple coverages and passing guys off? Whereas I think some of these guys are athletes, and if you tell them to run with that guy, they can do it. But if you ask them to fit in within the scope of a defense, they might struggle. And let's be honest, there's not a lot of corners that Bill Belichick's going to bring in here and say, you know what, take Marvin Harrison, we'll talk to you at the end of the game.
And this is one of those guys, by the way, that, you know, to talk about one of the guys that you brought up earlier, Courtney Taylor. Isn't he the one that said
yes.
Courtney Taylor was the toughest receiver?
Well, they're teammates.
No. Taylor plays at Arkansas.
That's right.
Auburn plays at Arkansas.
Yeah. Irons, said
Irons was
about
the
teammate. His teammate, but didn't Houston
yes,
say it?
Houston did say it too.
That he
yes.
was the toughest receiver he
because,
faced.
Well,
now,
he listed him. No, he said they asked him who were the toughest.
Okay,
and he listed
was one
a couple.
Okay.
And he said, Bo, I think he listed.
Yeah,
just
usually the SEC guys said Bo, Meacham, and Taylor
right.
were the three.
And there was a reason.
And he also faced Jarrett too.
Yes, he did face Jarrett, but he listed Taylor and he said specifically, the best route runner I've ever played. And was it him?
Well, Michael Cole from Alabama State, who started his career
yeah,
at Arkansas,
who transferred from Arkansas,
said that he said specifically, he said, I think you guys are underrating that Taylor a little bit because he's one of the best receivers, if not the best, I've ever played against.
That's clearly the consensus of cornerbacks. So Taylor is underrated.
And that's another team, by the way, Auburn, that didn't have great quarterback play.
Right.
So if you're getting people talking about their receivers like
right.
that, I think that's a little bit more impressive than, say, a guy who played for Matt Leinart for 3 years.
And I just want to get to one more email here because we've been talking about the draft a lot on this show, you think?
For about 80 minutes.
Okay, well, this guy, I don't like this douchebag, this straw milkman 21. He says, how about getting back to the basics? This is the guy who wanted to eat me. Now he pretends he doesn't like me even though he wants, you know. How about getting back to the basics, i.e. what the Patriots need and the programs, schools they come from, you know, because we have been talking about their, you know, who they're going to draft. He says, I think the Patriots go to the well from certain programs year after year. They show something and other programs that they're not too high on. Success for the Patriots come from schools such as LSU, Marquise Hill, Texas, Georgia, to name a few. This is the one I like. And failure from programs like Penn State, Pitt, and Auburn. You guys want to throw some guys out there? Penn State, Pitt, and Auburn?
So in other words, they ignore those schools? Because I don't think they've drafted
any. No, failure. He's saying they've drafted good players from LSU, Texas, and Georgia, and failures from Penn State and Auburn.
Georgia, they've had success. I think we can admit that Seymour, Watson been pretty good picks, right?
Right.
LSU has been kind of up and down.
Jarvis Green's okay.
Rohan Davey, Marquise Hill, busts.
Stink. And Randall Gay was undrafted.
And undrafted and rookie free agent cornerback.
And they got, okay. Now, Texas.
Dave Thomas.
David Thomas is, help me out
here. Fine.
Is that the only guy from Texas that
Unless
I can even think of?
We're lumping in the whole state and want to take, like, Ty Warren.
But you can't
Bethel
do
Johnson.
That. That's
right.
Texas.
He said Texas.
He
said then
Texas.
He said Penn State, just, Pitt, and Auburn.
I can't think of one guy from any of those three schools that they've even drafted. Penn State, Pitt, and Auburn. I cannot think of one guy from any of those three schools in the Belichick era.
Well,
so that's what I'm saying. Is he saying that they ignore those schools or they've had failures when they've
success for the Patriots come from schools such as LSU, Texas, Georgia, to name a few, and failure from programs like Penn State, Pitt, Auburn. I'm talking about draftees, not free agents.
And by the way, the last guy I can think of from Pitt is Curtis Martin, and he wouldn't fall into the failure category.
Well, then he goes on to he wants to know about David Thomas.
Quite a while ago.
He wants to know about.
But I'm just trying to think of Pitt guys.
But he wants to know about David Thomas, the inside linebacker from Michigan.
David Harris.
Andy likes him.
I like him. He's mean. He's kind of got the Leron
Landry.
We heard
a lot of good things
mean.
About him. And then
ran well.
Yeah.
I like him. He would be a little bit of my next tier. I clearly think Willis is the best, and since Mayock and everyone else is telling me Beeson is good, I'll throw him in there as well. Next
Beeson's
tier
phenomenal.
Down, I think Harris is a guy, might be a two-down kind of guy, and might not be ready to come in immediately make an impact.
He's on the rise, though.
He is.
A lot of people are talking about
him. Played inside and out, 3-4 in his sophomore season, I believe. They played predominantly a 3-4, so he has some experience. We've all seen the fact that a lot of these Michigan guys are underused at Michigan, go on to have better careers, and we see that maybe Bill sees that as well, questions what's going on there, although they did bring in a new coordinator, so that could affect some of the defensive guys. But he's a guy I like. You know, I would, like I said, next tier down, third-round pick, second-round pick maybe, I'm interested.
All right.
Is it Penn State, Pitt, and what was the other school?
Auburn.
Well, we all know who the greatest player to ever come out
of
Auburn
was. You can continue.
Bo Jackson.
Well, we were going to go to a break, so should we go to a break?
Go to a break.
Okay, so Gary, we'll go to a break, and we'll be right back.
When you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sacotype sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. And hot Sack Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Oh, now a shot! Unbelievable! 3-2, Taylor Twellman!
Wear what the pros wear, exclusively from the Revolution Pro Shop. Conveniently located at Gillette Stadium, it's the perfect place to get all of your official New England Revolution apparel. The Revolution Pro Shop features apparel made by Adidas, the official apparel provider of the MLS. Everything from jerseys and sweatshirts to hats and jackets. Give your jersey a kick by having the Pro Shop customize it with the name and number of your favorite player or the name and number of your choice. With a huge selection of Revolution items for men, women, kids, and infants, the Revolution Pro Shop has something for everyone. The Revolution Pro Shop at Gillette Stadium is open to the public from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Can't get to the stadium? The Revolution Online Pro Shop is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at revolutionsoccer.net. Get the gear your favorite player or coach wears on the field at the Revolution Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
Makes a tackle, drives it upfield, to the 10, to the 5, touchdown, Benjamin.
From a first-round draft pick in 2004 to owning the longest touchdown reception in Patriots playoff history, Benjamin Watson has become a standout for the three-time Super Bowl champs.
One of the best I've ever
Now you can get an official mini replica helmet exclusively from the New England Patriots signed by Benjamin Watson free. His authentic mini helmet comes complete with a chin strap, receiver, face mask, and Ben Watson's autograph. All you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points, redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Benjamin Watson. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to your first 400 with qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
Well, you really went bald there, didn't you?
All right, we're back. Tom Casale, Andy Hart, Paul Perillo, draft expert Fred Kirsch not with us today. He will be returning next week.
He's upstairs reading Our Lads.
It's web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482.
I was banging 19-year-old blonde girls.
Hey, Paul, I talked to Casey Joyner at the Combine,
yes.
The ESPN
yes.
scientist guy. And first of all, I made sure we were getting his new book, and we're on the list. He'll be sending that. But he's also working on another new book that is due to come out.
Overrated Division III linebackers?
I wasn't even rated, so that certainly wouldn't consider me. It's basically like a perception reality or Mythbusters kind of football book where he's going to take myths about the game, traditional thoughts, and break
like you have to
down.
Run to set up the pass.
Yeah,
stuff like that. The one I said.
And it's gonna involve all those. So you'll either love it or hate it. You'll probably hate it.
Why?
I don't know. Because you get kind of cranky about numbers sometimes.
Yeah, but I'm a big.
You're
fan.
Old school. You're one of those crusty old scouts.
What popped in your head to say that?
What do you mean?
This thing about the book.
Casey Joyner.
Because Casey Joyner. We're at the Combine.
But I think
I'm
that
spreading
you're,
the wealth of knowledge I gained in Indy.
I say
unlike
that,
B-Lo, I picked things up in Indy.
I think that you're misrepresenting me. I don't like the numbers. You are right about that. But there are a lot of things like conventional wisdom
I do not
drive
care
me crazy.
About
like
the numbers.
How many times you see teams on defense at the end of a game not call the timeouts to save the time? I mean, because we're on defense. We don't call timeouts on defense. I mean, there's a lot of things that are quote unquote accepted football. You know, like the run to set up the pass. I would love to see some data that disputes that.
Just another random thought that popped through my head. Prescott Burgess, jerk.
Yeah, and he...
Just throwing it out there.
We saw him yesterday, didn't we?
He ran the 4.9. It's
stinks.
It's called
jerk.
Slow.
It's called slow.
That's what he was. It was it's called. Like
that's the guy.
You know, I got mad because... And it was Goose who was asking some of the questions that he was given attitude. Now, I might not like Goose's questions, but who the bleep are you to be questioning Goose? One of the most respected football writers in the country... Don't give him attitude, and don't be a jerk when you're on your job interview.
They're showing the DeMarcus Russell highlight clip here. What say you guys about DeMarcus? Was he as doughy as he's being portrayed
as? I think
as?
That's overblown. Yeah. Paul, he played at 255, right, in college. He's 265. You know how long it takes DeMarcus Russell to lose 10 pounds? Probably 6 minutes. This whole thing that he's out of shape. Yeah. Listen, he wasn't going to work out.
When was he in shape?
Yeah, he's always been a big guy. First of all, his running ability is totally overblown because he hardly ever runs.
Is he like Rohan Davey?
Yeah.
He's a lot like – he's got
and
a big arm.
I only say that before I get attacked. I only say that because he's another LSU running back that a lot of people thought
– right.
Was,
but and he also has a big arm. Both guys can probably throw it through the uprights from 75 yards away from one knee.
Yeah, I didn't say that with any racial connotations because they're both black quarterbacks.
Right. Yeah, we only make fun of race when they're white guys.
That's true.
I was impressed with him at the combine because he really handled the media well. Like he was answering a question, and another guy annoyingly interjected his question, and he pointed to him and he said, "Excuse me, sir, can I finish answering his question? Then I'll get right to you."
Oh, I like that.
He was like,
"I like that."
He had that presence, and here's my opinion. I love Calvin Johnson, but if you're the Oakland Raiders, you cannot win in this league with your current quarterback situation. You have to take a chance on the guy because you cannot do anything with Andrew Walter and whoever else is on that.
hideous
football.
That's
it, because isn't Tui Asasopo gone?
And,
he's a free agent, right?
Brooks is gone.
And
so.
Brooks, they failed to pick up the option, which I think was a wise move.
Now, obviously.
Because unlike Andy, I knew that Brooks couldn't play.
Well, and obviously, Russell's career is going to go in the toilet.
I never said he could play.
Because
I said he had talent.
He's being coached by Lane Kiffin. So,
right.
who doesn't shave yet. So
Paul's building his franchise around Jeff Garcia over there, and he'll be fine.
Oh, please. No one thinks that Jeff Garcia is more overrated than I do.
No, you love him. You wanted to trade Donovan McNabb. You're the reason his mom was so upset.
Let's get back to the emails before people yell.
I just didn't feel real crisp.
Raymond from Turlock, California. He said, "Hey, guys, hope all is well. I just heard about the Chad Jackson torn ACL news, and it sucks. There goes another mini camp and training camp and even possibly the start of the regular season. Where do we go now? Our best receivers are probably Rashay Caldwell and Jabbar Gaffney, with Troy contemplating retirement. Wide receiver, I think, is becoming a really big need. It was becoming one last year. Now it is a really, really big need. My question is, any chance we take a wide receiver in the first round with one of the picks? I was hoping for defensive end, outside linebacker, which we kind of think won't happen, and a DB, whether it may be a safety or a corner. But with the way things are turning out, I think wide receiver is now a bigger need than DB. What do you guys think? Thanks for reading the email. I think they could if they like one.
Yeah. You have two picks in my mind and three needs that you could go for there. Inside linebacker, defensive back, and wide receiver.
See, I think that the bigger need, I think that you're right. The wide receiver need is probably a bigger need. However, I think that that position
is
not as big a need.
Right.
Do you know if you understand what I'm saying? I don't think they have as many wide receivers as they do defensive backs that I would consider NFL caliber, like Patriots caliber. But I think you can get by, and I think you saw that a little bit last year. I think you can get by with probably what most would consider a subpar crop of receivers. You got nothing out of Chad Jackson last year. So if you get nothing out of him this year either, it's not less than you got last. I mean, what did he have? 13 catches. Well, so you're not losing.
Well, let me ask you this, Paul. You say Troy Brown retires, right? At what point does Brady start getting irritated?
Well, I think that point happened last September.
Yeah.
Well, but what
I know, question.
But what point do you think he starts letting people know he's a little more irritated than maybe they do? Because if they don't start bringing in somebody who can get open and catch the ball on a regular basis, you got to figure sooner or later he's going to reach his boiling point, don't
no,
you think?
No, I think that he reached it. I really do.
Everyone
and
sucks
I think
but
that,
me.
I think that's part of it. I think that's part of it.
Now that's funny.
And I'm not saying that they won't draft a wide receiver, because I think that there's a possibility that they will. And one of my, you know, Andy, you always talk about the things that annoy me. One of my biggest pet peeves
is they won't do this.
They won't
right.
draft.
You
know,
any way you slice it sucks.
We all know that they'll do anything that they think is the best move for the team. So if that means wide receiver 24, 28, if that means trading up for a wide, I don't think there's anything they won't do if they think it's the right thing.
So you're saying that they're going into the draft and they need linebackers, defensive backs, and wide receivers. Haven't we been down this road before? Seems awful similar to last year.
Yeah, I just think the defensive backs are harder to find than wide receivers. I guess that's probably the short way of saying what I just said.
Okay, well,
I wish you could have gotten to that 10 minutes ago.
I'm sorry.
Sawyer from Waterloo, he says, "Hey, guys, hope you had a great combine and hope our ice storm didn't hit you too bad. What is the history behind the combine? Is it new, or is it just seem to be new because of the media coverage?"
Yes.
It was Nolan Cromwell. Gil Brandt will be happy to tell you.
By the way, have you seen Gil Brandt?
How he created the combine, because Nolan Cromwell was walking off a plane in Dallas to meet with the Cowboys, and he had all his medical records with him because he had just visited a bunch of other teams. And Gil, in his infinite wisdom, or whatever that word,
infinite, not infamous,
wisdom,
which isn't even a word.
Well, that's why you have Microsoft where you got the spell check. If you write it wrong, you just hit that go to language. it'll find it for you. He saw Cromwell come down with all his medical reports, and he thought there's got to be a better way. It's kind of like Festivus with a Mr. He said there's got to be a better way when he was beating up the guy for the Dow. So they came up, they had, what was it, three, Andy?
Yeah, they started with three of
three,
them.
They had three, and then they combined it into one.
See what they did there? Combined.
That's a play on words.
Another little aspect people don't know about is it's not actually run by the NFL. It's run by National Scouting for the NFL. So it's technically run through them. It's always in Indy, but they only have a contract through next year. It's how they do it every year. It seems like every year the talk is, should we move it? Is there a better place? No. The answer is no. and he's perfect for it. It's got the steakhouse. It's got the dome. It's got the convention center.
I love that freaking place, other than the Embassy Suites, which is a terrible hotel.
I just think it makes the most sense. It's centrally located, you know, for all the for the whole league, and you have the dome and the convention center, which I think is perfect.
I think the one that's trying to get in is Chicago.
Yeah, they're out.
Because they have a bigger hub. I think one of the little concerns is Indy's not quite the flight hub that you would expect. And we saw that where you can only, if we went from Providence, we had to go somewhere else, blah, blah, blah.
Who cares? You get
Chicago
around
Chicago is basically, you can get to Chicago from anywhere.
I was proud that you were able to get through Logan with no problems.
No problem.
I was bitching and moaning a little bit.
We got booted
out of the central parking or whatever.
I have no
preconceived
notions.
But it turned out good for us.
Turned out
right,
that the lot they made us go to was right by the door.
Paul, we drove in at almost 5 o'clock on Wednesday. Into the middle of Indianapolis. There wasn't a car to be found. Unbelievable. I was like, you got to be kidding me. There's no traffic whatsoever.
It's a very weird city in terms of...
I think it's an underrated city.
I do, too. It's nice that everything's connected via those Skywalk things, except when they're locked on Sunday nights and you can't get through them.
More complaining from us. Who's getting everything paid for at the NFL Combine?
But it's like there was no one there, but they have this big mall and fancy stores, like high-end stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, who spends the money to keep these places afloat? Then we go to the terrible Alcatraz Grill, where they still have great wings, but the rest of the menu sucks, and they keep changing it.
And apparently they're gonna change the menu and offer $25 hamburgers. I don't know who that's targeted for, but it certainly isn't us.
Fred Kirsch might get a bill for one of those next year, see what that's all about. It's got
What's that
Kobe beef. That fancy Kobe beef or whatever. That's Gary probably knows
with
that he's
fried brie cheese on it. But he goes on to say,
I want no part of that.
He said, Paul, you did a great job. I was just wondering if there would ever be a job available on the show. I never played football. I don't have an English degree by any means. I don't have any inside contacts. I'm really not that bright. Hey, I could take Andy's place.
I was going to say, we already got one of those. He hosts every week.
Thanks, guys. And that's Sawyer.
Yeah. I thought I was going to go with Kyle, but we hired Kyle. So,
well, thank you for the kind words, Sawyer.
Screw you, Sawyer. I'm back up. Who was fighting with Sawyer? I'm on the other guy's side now.
Who?
Shannon.
Shannon.
Shannon. Yeah, Sawyer, you're a tool from Waterloo.
Oh, jeez. He just wants to.
Why don't you just join the drunks in Ireland?
I got to work every week with two guys. All they want to do is fight everybody that
well,
writes
now,
in.
Well, I got a guy I really want to fight now. Is that straw milkman came back? You know, I only write. You know I only write you to be made fun of. Tom, I still love you, despite of your dirty D-pens. But seriously, you haven't gotten a Patriot... Listen, but seriously, you haven't gotten a Patriots draft pick right since you came here last year. I've only been here for one draft, and I want to know how many people ever get a Patriots draft pick right.
Or any other teams that's out of the top, say, 5, 6, 7.
He says, if Charles Johnson from Georgia is the Patriots' 60th pick in this year, will you wash my dirty laundry for me? But no, I'll tell you what. If they draft him with the 60th pick, I will send you $100 cash. How does that sound? Gary, you got that on tape? Straw milkman who... Oh, no, I can't send it to you because you're the guy that wants to eat me. I'll have someone else send you $100 via, what is that, money order? We'll do it that way. $100 if they take Charles...
Steptoe. Now, that's a name.
Charles Johnson with the 60th pick. $100 for Straw Milkman. If they draft him with the 60th pick, I will send you $100 cash. How does that sound?
There
you got that on tape? And it will be cash.
There's no chance of that happening.
None.
Virtually zero.
Of either happening, of them drafting him or me sending $100.
Is that tape still rolling?
Okay. He says...
Cindric Steptoe.
Is you like that?
All right. Wait, is this...
I don't know.
You know what? I'm sorry, but I don't have time to read these crazy trade proposals. This isn't
the one-man show from last week. Yeah. We don't have time for one man.
Right now I'm seeing Matt Light, Stephen Neal, Matt Castle, and our 24th pick for the number 2 pick in the draft. No, that's not going to happen, so I'm sorry.
We're going to trade 2 starters and a backup quarterback for the number 2 pick?
Apparently.
What are we hoping?
One is a Pro Bowler.
What are we hoping to get out of that
Pro Bowl
number 2
left
pick?
Tackles are kind of all
valuable. By the way, I watched the All Access last week in Hawaii. Very, very good stuff with Bill on the sidelines. Bill, I'll just say one quick thing I told Tom yesterday. Ed Reed comes off the field on one play, and he pats him on the head. Nice job, Ed. He goes, you know, I'll tell you what. You give me you and these two corners, that's all I need for a defense.
Yeah.
That's all I need. Well,
but
Bailey
instead,
and Mathis.
But
I guess,
instead,
right?
He drafts defensive linemen.
Figure. I think it's very funny in that you look, and that's what I said to Tom. I go, he's constructed his defense exactly the opposite way.
Right.
You know, you give me the 3 defensive linemen, and you, We don't need the rest.
Ellis Hobbs heard that and said, hey.
Pratt from Germantown, Maryland. He says, hey, PF Dub Buds. He says, I was listening to your latest podcast you guys put out on draft prospects and Tom's reaction from the combine. Andy, you weren't here because we did it yesterday. He said, Tom said that might not be the right year for the Patriots to have two first-rounders due to the lack of playmakers, valued players. Now, since you've gotten some good chunk of money to spend and the draft ain't looking so hot right now, isn't it time to get aggressive and sign players like Adalius Thomas? I've been reading a lot of rumors, hints, tidbits that the Pats are front-runners in showing interest in Thomas. If the rookies aren't blue chippers like Reggie Bush or Matt Leinart, they can't demand much money right away. This should save the Patriots plenty of cap cash to sign free agents that are proven play. No, that's not. It's all about draft positioning. It
right.
doesn't matter if your name's Reggie Bush or Tom Casale. If you're drafted two, you get an increase over
whatever
la-
the guy
last
year.
Year
got. You got a.
It's basically slotted. That's why. That's
raise.
Why it takes a while before the first rounders start to sign because they all kind of fall in line.
Right.
And listen, hey, I may be wrong on this, and hopefully I am, but I don't think they're going to be a player for Adalius Thomas. Not with the I just those words Ozzie Newsome said to me, or not to me, to us at the combine.
What are you, B-Lo getting one-on-ones with guys?
I knew I was going to get that one.
No, that was well done right there.
It was at the combine. He's just him saying that. And you know who the number one guy in free agency is. So if he's saying that he can't believe the money that's going to be thrown around, I have a hard time believing that the Patriots are going to go after the top guy on the board. It just doesn't seem to make sense based on what they've done in the past.
And then my
and maybe that'll change. Who you don't know.
I'd love to use my little theory about the roster bonus for a guy like Thomas, because I think if the Patriots could do that with him, somehow pay him $15 million this year.
And maybe they do.
On a one, but I just think other teams are going to be able willing to pay him $15 million in signing bonus and salaries. You know what I mean? He's going to get more money than that. I think there's always going to be more money out there unless they're willing to blow their whole load on him.
I'm going to throw out a team for you. San Francisco. Watch out for them in the Adalius Thomas.
Fox is in the hen house, huh?
You're going to have to give me the update on that, by the way. Oh, I
know. They're the front runners.
Did you guys see the Foxes in the hen house story for this one?
No.
Sean Salisbury, the latest buffoonery. He's ripping everything about the combine and, you know, these tests and this doesn't mean anything. The Wonderlic and Susie Colbert is giving them questions and she reads a question and he is all obnoxious about it. And I think I have the numbers right. It was,
I want to kiss you.
Thanks, Joe.
If you're 17 years old and your sister is twice your age, how old will your sister be when you're 23?
40.
He said 46. And he was obnoxious about it. Absolutely obnoxious about it. He was going on. Yeah, and this is supposed to equate to intelligence on the football field. Yeah, give me a break. And Marty Schottenheimer is with him, and Marty Schottenheimer says 40. And they're making fun of Schottenheimer for getting it wrong.
I was just thinking about having sex with the sisters.
Oh, God.
I got to be honest. I can't really fault Salisbury for that one because I could see myself falling into that trap. Feeling 100% sure on my answer.
2 years ago, I was banging
19-year-old
blonde girls.
It just took you less than 10 seconds to get the answer right.
No, I know that specific case I got right, but I could see myself falling in a trap where I think I'm right
and be
obnoxious.
But you wouldn't be
on a
rant.
I mean, anyone who listens to this show knows I could fall into that trap, you know, being obnoxious and all.
Wow, I'm sorry. I thought that was just the latest example
of
him
having
no knowledge of what he's talking about.
And I still don't understand why he still has a job. I thought he was out.
Maybe he will be. The NFL Network's taken over anyway.
where you can get it.
Matt from Quincy.
Which is not the embassy, not so sweet.
Yes. What a terrible hotel that is. Matt from Quincy says, hey, Casale, a cheerleader convention and the combine, your cup runneth over.
That was the one I was laughing at this morning, by the way.
He's off. It wasn't a cheerleading convention this year. It was gymnastics.
Gymnastics.
So,
but either way, it equaled young girls in, like,
well,
little skirts and outfits.
One night, they said, all right, let's meet down in the lobby. So I'm down there for 10 minutes, and they come down, and I said, listen, leaving me down here for 10 minutes with young girls running around in their bathing suits is probably not a good idea.
Next to a free bar.
Yeah, next to a free bar.
Hey, little girl, you want to come with me?
Dave from Queens says, has anyone heard anything new about Michael Bush? I know we need linebackers and safeties, but if Bush can come back to form from where he was, he would be a steal with our second first-round pick. Has there ever been any talk about his work ethic or how he's progressing? Well, he came in lean and mean at the combine,
right.
247. He played over 250. People, he had gotten up to 270, I think he said, after the injury because he was, like, depressed and all that. But he looked pretty good.
270?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, you don't even weigh that much.
He was about 250 something when he played. He said he gained about 15 pounds.
He's a big back. No, I got to tell you.
No, I know he is. I know.
I know everybody's going to say, well, we need to wait to see him work out and run. I would draft him right now with a third or a fourth, an unseen type pick.
Why? Because you're with me and you don't think injuries mean anything anymore?
Well, especially a broken leg.
Yeah,
that's the way I would look at it, is a broken leg. What's the most it could have taken off him?
I don't care if you get fatty at a broken leg, and I'm just assuming he's going to, rarely does an injury like that
hurt you. I don't think you're going to get him that well, though.
No, I know.
Oh.
I'm just saying, I would, sight unseen, draft him somewhere in there right now.
I think he's going to be a high second, early, late first in
especially
that area.
Especially with what you guys were saying about running backs.
Yeah.
Right. It's not, if this
was
last
year, this guy's the wild card.
Maybe
in the end,
he falls
he's
last
be neck
year because there are more
Lynch
guys.
For the second guy taken.
And I've said this from the start, and you guys have heard me say it. I have a problem with Marshawn Lynch because every time they put Forsett in the backfield at Cal, I thought he was better. And I don't like I know it wasn't in the same situations all the time, but when I see a guy on a team who I think has more talent, now you're telling me this guy's going to go like number 12 or 13 in the, I don't know. That I just don't like stuff like that. I think he's a pretty good player, and I think if he goes in the late first round, I'm not going to complain. But if Marshawn Lynch is a top 15 pick, I think that's too high. I don't think he's that kind of back.
I agree.
I think there's one back in this draft, and we all know who he is, so.
Yeah, now he's getting ripped for running.
Yeah.
Why?
The local. It's the locals. Paul, I don't know how you listen to this local
your
radio.
Your freaking radio friends.
What did they say?
They were saying
Adrian Peterson?
They were saying, maybe he's he only cares about himself, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, because he ran in light
like
of his,
he, like,
his,
like he
prob- his
like the
family
story
situation.
Probably doesn't go, hey, he talked to his mother, and his mother said, listen, you stay there and do what you need to
that
do.
That comes directly
come
from
home.
Pro Football Talk, by the
well,
way.
Well, wherever it's from,
stupid.
But
it's stupid.
I choose not to run.
He's got some Seinfeld
see,
stuff now.
That was kind of funny. I've seen that
who
one.
Who was saying it on the radio? Curiosity.
I don't know.
Superstar linebacker out of Browns.
That's,
dad
that's
and
just ridiculous.
Somebody else. Butch Stearns, I think.
That's ridiculous.
They're your boys. I mean,
those aren't my boys.
You're one of them. You guys are a team over there.
Well, if you shut up, someone actually has a compliment for you.
Oh, nice.
Amazingly. Craig from Boxborough says, hello, A-team. Fred included this time. And amazingly, Fred is...
Well, that's why.
We won't be telling him about that.
That's why there was nothing fresh in his mind to say.
How are the? That's true. How are the Patriots going to fill the void made by Dylan's departure if they do, in fact, release him? I don't think they will release him, but according to his agent, they have agreed to do so. I would like to think that they would try to get at least a fourth-round pick for him. You're out of, no way. There's nobody in their right mind would trade a fourth-round pick. We heard the same kind of stuff when Eddie George. Like, why don't they trade him for a fourth-round pick? No one's going to trade for an old running back who can't play anymore.
I would fully expect him to be released.
Yes, you've talked and you think that's
I would be. I mean, I've talked to some agents in the past where they, you kind of you immediately hang up the phone, you start talking.
Lying?
And you're like, I don't necessarily buy that. This one, I buy.
Who, David Cantor?
Yeah, the...
Talk to him much.
The fans, you have to realize when you talk about trades is that age is always included when you think of a trade. So teams aren't going to give up high draft picks for a guy who's got maybe one more year of split duty left
right
in him.
Age, finances.
Yeah, and
why
he wants
team...
money, too. It's not like he's saying, I'm going to play for the veterans minimum. Let's go.
Yeah, so, I mean, but even if you could get him, your only chance to get him for the veteran minimum is for him to be released, and then you to be the only team that's willing
right
to sign him, and when he's desperate, you sign him for the minimum.
Right.
Otherwise, yeah, I wouldn't trade for him. I don't know why anybody would.
Where do you go to replace him?
Well, he goes on to ask. He goes, he said, would they be interested in trading for a running back like Thomas Jones, or would they try to draft a running back like Leonard to replace him? Then there is free agency.
Thomas Jones, like a 1,400 yard.
Which
back
is the most likely?
You're not getting Thomas Jones
of those options. I would say the answer to the problem would be a guy exactly like Dylan. The only difference being he is willing to take a smaller role in the offense. P.S. I have a newfound respect for Andy after his excellent combine analysis, even though we all know Tom is better.
Oh, suck it!
Is that the part that you threw in there at the bottom?
I did. It's right there.
Oh.
I don't know. What do you guys think? I know, Andy, you like Brown, Chris Brown as a possible.
Well, I don't love him, but I just think he's the kind of guy who's had success. Injuries have hurt him. So if you bring him in to share carries, I think you might be able to get more production than how much you're going to have to pay him.
The Thomas Jones thing, I know that he wants to be traded, but he's been very productive the last couple of years, 1,300-plus yard guy.
And he certainly doesn't want to be traded to split carries
with
Lawrence
and the
Maroney.
Only, yeah, that's the reason. I don't think he would want to go there. And the only way I would say is in the past, we've seemed to have absolutely raped the Chicago Bears with Jerry Angelo. And I think that's partly due to the relationship between Belichick and Angelo.
So we'll send Dan Klecko for Thomas Jones.
That's the only. I'll give it a 1% chance. We'll give you a Thomas Jones, you know, for a third round pick or something. And the Patriots say, sure, we'll take it. I mean, they somehow got Ted Washington on the eve of the season that year for nothing. I mean,
would you be surprised if there's a, to steal a basketball term, mid-major trade for the Patriots this offseason?
No.
Given the money and the landscape of free agency where you have money to spend, so you could trade for a guy, renegotiate, give him some money, do whatever, and maybe get a valuable starter or player. You know, do you think we could see, you know, a Dre Bly is a name out there, but one of these guys who might be, you might be able to get for a third-round pick, second-round pick, give him a new contract, and you ended up with what's better
Stallworth
than free agent. Yeah.
I think more in terms of a guy like Dre Bly than Stallworth, only because of Stallworth's injury history. But, yeah, no, I would not be surprised. Anytime, I think the Patriots are interested in trading as much, if not more, than any other team. So,
how about Lance Briggs? Where is there sharpening him a little bit?
Yeah, that's the new one that's sort of been making the way.
What is that team doing?
Around. I don't know what the team is thinking.
You know, I said a couple weeks ago, Bears in San Diego, thanks for stopping. We'll see you in a couple years. Their run is done. They talk about two teams that have totally just fell off the
sabotaged themselves.
Since the end of the season.
San Diego especially. A.J. Smith, how's the pressure?
Yeah. Owen from Belfast, Ireland, he asks about a first-round quarterback or safety, and we talked about that. But I've seen highlights of Leonard Peters, safety out of Hawaii.
He
looked good, but these were just highlights of all his best plays, and most players look good in highlight reels. What do you guys think
of
him?
I love him as a
6th, 7th round guy, play special teams. He's only going to play like 4 years in the league because he's going to kill himself with the way he plays. But I think if you get him like as a special teams backup safety guy later in
the
draft.
He's Deion Anderson on defense.
Yeah, maybe an undrafted free agent even. Yeah. It's not necessarily a guaranteed.
We never got a chance to talk to him, though. We never saw him.
Yeah, he didn't come in. Did a terrible job.
But we've seen that. And any Patriots fan who is just looking for something, go on YouTube and look him up.
Yeah, you'll love it.
You'll enjoy it. Fred Kirsch would love him. Paul Perillo would hate him.
I've seen him.
His hair would become gimmicky. Paul would really hate that.
Didn't he look slow yesterday, Tom?
Yeah, he's not that fast. He's like
he's
a
4.6
guy.
I thought he looked slow.
He's not fast sprinting, but I defy you. Watch that tape, and there's times when he looks like
really
he's shot out of a cannon.
He does. He has good football speed.
Well, I think it's his instincts, reaction, and willingness to. He's one of those guys. You know how they say, no matter what you do, do it at 100 miles an hour, 100%. He does it because he doesn't care. If he runs into a brick wall, he runs into a brick wall. He'll get up later.
Yeah, maybe he's the Willie Andrews of this year. Seventh round pick who comes in, plays special teams.
Can we talk about Eric Weddle?
Yeah, a little bit. Did we?
Seventh round pick that guy is?
Yeah.
Oh, he's getting a lot of pub for a guy. He may or may not even be drafted.
Russ from Canton.
No, not Weddle.
No. The guy from Hawaii. Yeah. Peters.
Russ from Canton. He wants to know about Diasi's rise and is he a first-day pick? I would say so now. And he said the NFL Network projected him as an outside linebacker after he played inside in college.
Yes,
that is correct.
People are in love with him as an outside linebacker. He's got a big frame, long arms, the weight, the speed. Seems to have everything. Although, I'll be honest with you, I didn't think he looked that built. And I don't know if maybe he's a guy that will add some as the years go on. He didn't have that real muscular build look to him. It's almost surprising that he weighs as much as he weighs.
This is Sean McLaughlin. He says, here are some of the worst statements I've seen this offseason. Do you think we should hire Marty Schottenheimer as an offensive coordinator? Should we bring Drew Bledsoe as a backup to Tom Brady?
Are these from SPFWs?
Corey Dillon is very sincere about his retirement, quote, let's bring in Adam Archuleta. He will be a great addition to the secondary.
Well,
that might have been Andy.
I'm going to have to go with that one.
We should draft Zach Diasi in the second round. Those were some beauties that I've seen and heard.
It's been a long month,
and I do think I got more out of Tom and Andy's analysis than the week-long coverage of the NFL Network gave at the Combine. Well, thank you very much. We appreciate that.
So forward that email to Fred Kirsch at races.com.
Sean goes on to say, I know wide receiver is a need, but what is the best Pats option? Sign Dante Stallworth or Drew Bennett, trade for Randy Moss, or draft another second-round draft pick that will have a great future like the one we drafted last year? And that was a joke.
He
meant it as a joke.
Pretty much any guy they draft in the second round is questionable because their track record in the second round is a little suspect.
Second and third rounds are where
They fall in love with the measurables.
Right. That's where they take their chances. And that's what Belichick talks about is a lot of those guys, second and third round picks are guys with first round talent that for whatever reason don't get taken in the first round. Now, there's, it sounds very simplistic, but there are reasons why a guy like Bethel Johnson runs the best combine time and has all of these things that jump off the page at you, but he's a second round pick. We found out a lot of those reasons during his time in New England. That's just one example. There's the second and third rounds, especially the third round, is littered with guys like that. Off-field problems, lazy habits, lazy work habits off the field. You know, quote-unquote, football's not all that important to them. There's a lot of reasons that fall into it, and the Patriots have been up and down in those two rounds as a result.
All right, we got a few more emails. Let's fire through them. Gabe wants to know how many times did Ty Law get arrested? Because we were talking about three arrest guys. He said he knows the time in Canada.
One is the only one I know of.
Okay.
This is Ty Law.
That may not be
Welcome
true.
Welcome to Miami.
No, there was something in Miami. During an
offseason, did he get arrested?
He was running. He had an A.J.
Nicholson
type story.
I do remember that. Did he get arrested, though, for that?
I don't know the exact.
So that's two incidents, though, anyway.
Potentially.
But, hey, if there was a third one there that I don't know about, tough.
Now, do you think they would go arrest or conviction?
Well, they would probably go conviction, but I wouldn't. Because I think the black mark on the league, Andy, is when a guy gets pulled over and gets arrested.
Because
you can't take that back.
One reason I'm asking is, for example, domestic abuse. If a woman calls, you're automatically arrested, correct?
Yeah.
Regardless, they could get there, and she could have a baseball bat beating you over the head, and you're going to jail. Something like that where it's automatic, could you... That's just where I wonder if they would have to go conviction.
You know, like, what I would go for is the guy... The Houston Texans guy whose name is completely
Fred Weary.
Escaped. There you go.
That got tasered.
Yes.
Illegitimately.
For absolutely no reason. And it turned out that, but it's still a black mark on the league because the guy, when it originally happens, there's nothing you can do about it. It's out there. You can't take it back even when the guy's right. And that's what they're looking to avoid. They're trying to rehab their image. And when the players are talking about doing
it. Now I just think you're forcing players to be saints 24 hours a day.
Well, no, I'm just asking them not to get arrested, Andy.
Have you ever been
arrested?
This will be an ongoing discussion.
I just think anybody who walks into a bar, there's a chance that you could be that.
How many bars do you walk into?
I got to be honest with you.
Andy walks into a bar. It comes out the hard way.
I just think we've all been in those situations a million times, but we found ways not to get arrested.
Well, I know stories about you beating people up in Foxborough Stadium, and you didn't get arrested. It doesn't mean it was right.
All right, well, let's try to at least fire through the next couple of emails. This is Patrick. He's from Minnesota. He said, thanks for the information. He hates the Viking fans. He says, since this is everything but Patriots.com radio, do you guys think the Vikings would take Brady Quinn if he falls to their pick or keep Tavares Jackson as their quarterback?
I would think they would take
Brady Quinn.
And they'd be making the wrong decision because they have the quarterback of the future on their roster. Poor man's Young.
Patriots coach there, I think.
There's a bunch of them.
Or a scout.
There's a bunch of them. If you watch these closely, you can see a bunch. Yeah, that's that guy. He's kind of the built scout.
He said, who do we got here? All right, this is nothing.
Pete Mangurian did a lot of some drills.
Let's go to one more email before we leave.
I thought they were coming rapid fire. What the heck are you waiting for?
I can't read them all because you guys keep talking about that three strikes thing that I really don't care about.
That insignificant stuff, you know?
I really don't care about people. If they get arrested, they get arrested. If they, I don't really care. Just tell me what they do on the football field. I care about Pac-Man Jones.
What, do you work for the Bengals?
Evidently, that's where he wants to work.
I asked this question on Ask PFW and got no response, so I'm trying here. Many times when readers ask why the front three doesn't make more plays, we are told their job in the Pat scheme is to occupy offensive linemen so the linebackers can make plays. But who are the linebackers who make plays? I can't count on one hand how many plays linebackers made this season and have
Ty Warren not make any plays this year when he had 100 and something tackles? Were none of those plays?
Well, he goes on to say
he had six sacks or whatever he had. Were none of those plays?
He said the linebackers got burned in coverage, missed tons of tackles, didn't pressure the quarterback, and didn't cause many turnovers. Doesn't sound like a great scheme to me.
What's the emailer's name?
I got one more line, and I'll let you know. I know the Pats came one play away from going to the Super Bowl. That doesn't mean they still can't improve. Can you explain what I'm missing? This is Shane from Miami.
Shane, the reason that you didn't see a lot of linebackers make plays is the reason why we're all saying that linebacker is the biggest need.
Right.
That's why we're all expecting the Patriots to be very interested in linebackers in the upcoming draft.
And correct me if I'm wrong. His scheme won 3 Super Bowls, took him to the AFC Championship game, set a record for points a lot.
And let's go, and let's go back to when this scheme was very effective. Who were the guys making plays? Mike Vrabel, Teddy Bruschi, Roman Pfeiffer, Willie McGinnis, I mean, those are the guys. So it's not the scheme. It's the play has deteriorated a little bit. They need a little infusion of athleticism in youth. I think we can all agree on that.
Yep. And, well, that'll do it for the post-combine edition of PFW in Progress. We'll be back next week with draft expert Fred Kirsch leading the show. See you then.